Rose Society going, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is on the way, on the horn.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is the 30th day of August 2012, the last night of the Clavern in Tampa. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, your home for progressive conversation radio. It's a lot like nothing you're going to find anywhere else. And I don't say that out of self-praise or self-aggrandizement. I say that out of profound respect for what you have made this program. Not me. Not by any stretch of the imagination. The conversation comes from you, and the ideas come from you, and the occasional notes of effusive praise that I see are humbling indeed. And every time I get one of those emails, I have to show it to Agnes, and then she makes me wear a C clamp on my head to bed to keep it from swelling out of all proportions. I'm Bob Kincaid, like I said. And the horn is available on a wide variety of platforms across the interweb tubes. You know, it's not a big truck. Places like Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, DAR.FM. I'm still working on it, but I might as well mention them. And we have inexplicably disappeared from iTunes Radio. God knows why. But that really doesn't change things. The easiest way to get the stream, of course, is always to go to headonradionetwork.com. Lord knows we need the traffic. And pick up the stream with our Listen Live button there. Just a click and you're going. Or, of course, you can always get the stream at whiterosesociety.org, which is also the home of all the podcasting for The Horn. It is, as I noted, Thursday, the 30th day of August, 2012. Those repulsive, rotten, rancid, right-wingers will wrap up their little sheet and pillowcase festival this evening. They've got there's a special mystery guest, and everybody has, I guess the going odds out of Harrah's in Reno are something like even money that it's going to be Clint Eastwood, which is fine by me. I mean, Clint's a Republican. Wouldn't you kind of expect a Republican to, right? And what I'm really hoping for out of Clint is a speech that closes a little something like this. So I'm here to ask you to elect Willard Romney to be your president. Because, after all, deserving's got nothing to do with it. Boom, done. I could take that. I'm okay with that. Of course, I don't guess anybody will throw peanuts at Clint and holler, "This is how we feed the animals." No, not at all. So then Willard will talk tonight, and, you know, who gives a damn? I admit I've got the one-way television communication monitor turned on in here. Just the sound is down just so I can look over my shoulder and then look back over my other shoulder and throw up a little bit. And right. Yeah. Right, exactly, Honor to Dystopia. No, they won't throw anything at Clint Eastwood because Clint Eastwood is white. They better not. Because, after all, there's a whole bunch of people with guns inside that hall. No umbrellas, but, yeah, guns. Yeah, Marty, I know you've sent me the iTunes radio reply and the information they want from me. They've already got it, Marty. I'm not griping at you or anything, but that, you know, we were only on iTunes radio for freaking years. What, did they turn over the entire iTunes radio staff and everybody just forgot everything? Who knows? Interesting. There seems to, and I'm not trying to get into any sort of flame wars or anything, but lo and behold, I've got two notes. One in the chat room from Benedict, and one from our buddy Ron and Raleigh. Benedict in the chat room. Come on into the chat room, by the way. Head on RadioNetwork.com/chatroom. If you've never been there, there's never been a better time to hop on in. We'll have a good conversation going this evening. Benedict and Greg and Jug of Punch and Onward to Dystopia and Tim from L.A. are all in there right now, and the place will fill up quick. I mean, it's not like it fills up. It's not like there's only so many spaces. It's a right good little conversation that happens in there. Ooh tunes, Clayton? Don't forget ooh-ooh-oh-oh tunes? I don't know. Thanks, Dr. John. That Eastwood line knocked it out of the park. His Irvin's got nothing to do with it. Oh, thank you. Thank you for the affirmation, Dr. John. I appreciate it. Yeah, we try to bring the A material now and then. And speaking of A material, we've got, I told you for the last couple of nights that we were going to be having a special guest on the program. Night before last, I told you he was going to be with us. I told you he was going to be with us last night. But he is with us tonight. Guy James, veteran, inimitable, progressive broadcaster, is sitting on hold even as we speak. And before I bring him on, you know, he's broadcasting from behind the polyester curtain down in Florida. And I have to tell you, you know, he said yesterday that his pipes just, you know, lost his voice. And well, Guy James, we've been old broadcast pals for way too long now, so I'm going to have to thank you not to feed me lines of BS like that, because I know why you lost your voice. You've been screaming at the television again for these last 3 days, haven't you?
Guy James, who is that? This is Candy Crowley. I never.
Never screamed at a Republican convention on TV? You know, this is no program to start your career in prevarication, Guy.
Bob, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I had several things I needed to talk to you about. First of all, you know a lot about good old West, by God, Virginia, right?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, I want to know which organization up there, which is it that has the big Liars Club contest every year?
That's the Vandalia Festival.
Vandalia.
Yes.
In Vandalia, West Virginia?
No, it happens in Charleston.
Oh, okay. The Vandalia Festival.
Yeah, you have to. That name guy comes from the fact that one of the proposed names for West Virginia when we seceded from Virginia, which had seceded from the Union, one of the original names proposed for it, for the new state, was Vandalia, named after Abraham Vandal, one of the early pioneer settlers of the area.
I see. Well, there is a Vandalia, Ohio, too, you know.
I had no idea.
Home of the National Trap Shoot Championship, or it used to be anyway, at Vandalia, Ohio. I think that National Liars Club deal would be something that those folks at that little get-together up in Tampa ought to be looking into. Oh, my God. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. I can't believe it. I've heard a lot of political BS in my lifetime, you know, but never anything like the swill that's coming out of there. Oh, geez, it's killing me.
At one point I knew you'd lost your voice because you were screaming at the television.
Oh yeah.
Because I had lost mine doing the same thing. At one point I was sitting in here hollering at the TV, and just out of the corner of my eye I caught a glimpse of Agnes creeping around the doorway into the studio here, and she had her blowgun with the little Thorazine tip dart in it, and she had it aimed at my neck.
Well, I think it's the same thing here. I think Bess is real tired of me yelling, "You son of a," at the TV about every 5 minutes, you know. It's been terrible to try and keep quiet.
Well, our eldest Margie the other day referred to me as Yosemite Dad because I'm just sitting here behind
really?
In front of the TV going flag stag and blue nose knot pole fraggle ass and burst neck and burnt chop boots and daddy calm down daddy. So
oh, yeah.
No, I think I don't know that they would even need to show up, guy. At the Liars Championship, because the fact of the matter is, they're past masters. It'd be like cheating. To let pros in to compete with good-hearted amateur liars. And that thing from Paul Ryan last night was just one lie after another, wasn't it?
Just unbelievable, unbelievable. I can't. Is it the money? Do they know that they have enough money to pound that message home if they hit it enough? I guess. I'm losing faith in the American electorate. I really am. I just can't imagine people being dumb enough. And I'm talking about all of them, every single one of them that cast a vote for that ticket. I can't imagine how Americans could be that damn stupid to hear these things, not check them out, and find out that these guys, among a whole bunch of other things, are the biggest liar, political liars that I know of. I can't think of it.
Well, you know how bad it got? You know where one of the biggest takedowns of Ryan's speech came from yesterday or last night or this morning, guy?
No.
Fox News. A contributor to their website said that it described it in almost the very same terms as you did. One of the single greatest compendia of outright lies and falsehoods ever offered to a political public.
Fox did that
on their website. Yes.
Oh man, has Rupert cleaned him out over there yet? He couldn't like that a whole lot.
I'm guessing there's going to be a purge after something like that. But, you know, from peanut throwing to booing the screaming, chanting, USA, USA, at the person from Puerto Rico. Wow.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. I really have. Part of it's just damn funny and I can't imagine that. Now, what do you suppose Paul Ryan would say? How would he handle it if you actually did get to ask him the question, point blank, right in front of everybody, What about that story about the closed auto plant in Janesville, Wisconsin? What about that? Is that true? I'd love to hear somebody directly confront him with that.
Well, it was equally fascinating last night because I was catching some of the MSNBC coverage, and instead of confronting him directly, they had Wisconsin Governor Snot Walker on camera, and bless his heart, you know, yours and mine together, our favorite progressive broadcaster, asked him, how can Barack Obama be responsible for closing a plant that closed before Barack Obama was ever president of the United States? And Walker said, well, but see, if he had done a managed bankruptcy like Willard wanted, I wouldn't have closed. Maybe it would have been reopened. Hey, over there, a squirrel.
And furthermore, how about them nears?
Yeah, right. Yeah. On Wisconsin.
well, you know, it'd be different, but you know that auto plant is practically in Ryan's backyard. He lives there, for heaven's sake. Very nice community, I might say.
Oh, Janesville's a lovely place.
I love it. And
I love Wisconsin generally, and I can't wait until they get free of Scott Walker again.
Well, then we can go back there without worry of being caught.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret. I'm going out there in a couple of weeks.
Are you?
Yeah, there is a strong likelihood that the Horn will be broadcasting the entirety of the Fighting Bob Fest. Live from Madtown, Madison.
The Fighting Bob Fest?
Yeah, it's a great progressive Chautauqua that goes down every year out in Madison. I was invited out to the one Fighting Bob Fest North a few months ago in Chippewa Falls. And so I get to go back. We're going to be talking a little bit about mountaintop removal and what that means for people out in the upper Midwest, because they don't want to mine coal in Wisconsin, but they want to use the same techniques they use to take our mountains down to mine sand, Guy James, sand, which they then want to put on rail cars and send off for use in fracking.
Sand?
Sand. It's great sand.
That liars thing again here.
No, I'm not practicing. I'm retired.
Sand.
Sand mining. There is nothing left on this planet that some right-wing predatory corporation somewhere doesn't want to plunder. Sand.
Well, Bob, you know, I hear you say that with a little bit of disdain in your voice.
Did I not have enough? I meant to have a whole bunch.
No, and it's not fair of you because, you know, as bad as the right wants to get rid of the EPA, and they do, they would salivate over the very chance to get rid of the EPA. We all know that if they did get rid of that criminal organization, that the corporate America would have a good conscience and keep our air and our water just as clean as could be. It would be pristine if the corporations were left to their own devices and we'd had no doggone restrictive EPA, why, everything would be just fine, right?
Absolutely. There'd be a toxic chicken in every pot.
We'd be wearing gas masks outside. There'd be a love canal in every neighborhood.
Well, the whole blessed Central Appalachian region's on the way to becoming America's first total region Superfund site.
Oh, Bob, I for the rest of the Americans that care about that situation, I apologize for the rest of the people not being strong enough and resolute enough to emulate what you guys are doing to try and prevent that from happening. It's such a beautiful place being just killed by these corporate masters. It's terrible. Terrible.
And you know, they are thugs, Guy. I saw breaking news today. You know who Bob Murray is? I mean, he being a fellow Buckeye with you and everything.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who got 9 people killed in the Crandall Canyon disaster out in Utah.
Yeah.
The guy whose company pled guilty to 2 corporate misdemeanors for violation of safety rules for coal miners. The guy who owns the plant where the little workers had to be compelled to go and listen to Willard Romney speak a couple of weeks ago.
Without pay?
Without pay, right. Without even getting... Did you notice them on walking down the line there? They were all dirty-faced. They weren't even allowed to go to the bathhouse and get a shower.
No. They forced to go out and listen to that with no pay, and I was stunned. But then again, you pointed out the tyrants that are the coal mining companies. I mean,
well, it turns out that Bob Murray has sued the Charleston Gazette newspaper and probably the nation's single best reporter on coal issues, namely Ken Ward Jr. down at the Gazette. He sued him for libel because they done published stories about how his company is a criminal.
Well, if his corporation is a people, like we're told it is,
right?
Then he is a criminal, or it is a criminal, or however you would say it in that case.
Exactly. Well, I have to ask you. You know, it's not just last night and Paul Ryan there down at the Clavern, the Sheets and Pillowcases Festival in Tampa. there was the previous night as well. We can be honest here. I mean, it's just us out here on the internet, guy. What do you think of Ayn Romney as potential first lady material? Careful now. I don't want you to hurt your throat or nothing.
You're killing me. That woman has come across with so many people as the kinder, gentler, you know, stately woman and all this and that. And she came out with the biggest bunch of BS the other night, I think, in the most condescending manner. I get angry just seeing her, the way she talks to people, you people and us.
You people.
It's us people.
You peons. You serfs.
Yeah, and, you know, we're going for the sympathy vote there, and she tells us how great. And, of course, she has a good marriage, and nobody else does. And
she's got a real marriage, Guy.
A real marriage, that's right. I was appalled. I was really, really appalled.
Well, I've been waiting for the progressive blogosphere, broadcastosphere over here in, you know, left blog Sylvania or whatever they call us. I've been waiting for somebody to just really start wearing out that real marriage hooey. Because now Agnes and I have been married for 20 years coming up in May.
Congratulations, Agnes.
Yeah, there you go helping again.
I know you.
Well, that's true. But you know, to sit there and be lectured in that long fool woman in a red dress about how her marriage is real, and I guess Agnes and I, we've just got some sort of sham going on here. I don't know. Maybe we need to ask Mrs. Romney if our children are even legitimate. But why do we have? Is it kid gloves for her or something? I mean, the right wing has called Michelle Obama everything but a human being.
Yep.
But that woman sits there and tells us that she's got a real marriage and tries to stick it in and break it off on all the gay couples and lesbian couples and transgendered couples that would like to have a loving relationship sanctioned by, you know, the laws and constitution of this country. And she says, I've got a real marriage. That was so hideously offensive, Guy.
It was.
Where is our side?
Well, you know where it is, Bob. You know, you and several others around the country need a visit from the representative of John Beresford Tifton. You remember him?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's the Democratic Party who is woefully behind in the media wars. And in the radio, I mean to the point that it embarrasses me. It really and truly does. Every time I turn on the radio, particularly where I live, it's nonstop, just nonstop.
Drivel. drivel.
And you know, we've been there since the beginning. I remember a meeting in January of 2003 at the Capitol building where this liberal radio thing was supposed to get off the ground, and yeah, boy, we're all behind you. And several of the senators and congresspeople critters came in, and Harry Reid, and they all came in and spoke to us and said, yes, sir, we're going to get behind this. We're going to really get behind this. And, of course, it was forgotten the day after we left. I got so sick of hearing that. That, I guess, if I want to pin a lie on the Democratic Party, I'd have to say that's what it would be.
We're still paying the price for it, aren't we, Guy?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, I know you don't tune in intentionally, but just in case you missed it, the oxymoron, America's junkie,
yeah.
Flush Flembaugh, fellow Floridian of yours.
Come on.
Okay, I'm being mean. First, I trotted out Bob Murray as a fellow Ohioan, and now I'm working the. I don't get to do this very often, but he has declared that because we are sensitive to issues of dog whistling, things like, you know, real marriage and you people and things like that, that we're the racists. That's what happens when you take too much OxyContin, I guess. It'll make your brain go completely, it fills up with little corkscrews or something, and suddenly you think that you're not the racist, that, you know, the people who are conscious of race issues are.
We're the racist.
He done said it, and he's America's truth detector, right?
I heard him say that once. You take.
You know, he says things like talent on loan from God, and every time I hear that, margin call.
Yes. Oh, and then, you know, you had Neil Bord speaking the other night and talking about it, and you know, there isn't anybody worse than him, and of course Hannity and the whole gang of them. But I know people get tired of me being a one-trick pony and talking about that all the time, but I remain so disappointed over the powers that be in our party and the progressive movement that haven't properly funded and I've seen, as well as you, I've seen money wasted in the media that by progressives that could have gone for much better things.
Oh, yeah, things. Well, we're sorry. We can't fund you. That would take money away from our annual donut and printed pencil budget.
Yeah, that's the
point. I know. It's incredibly frustrating. Well, is it going to be down Florida way? Is it going to be as nasty as the rest of the country is, or did the failure to nominate, to pick Rubio take the air out of some Florida sails for the Republicans?
Not at all. I don't think anybody's disappointed about that. I think they're all happy as can be with Ryan, except for a few Hispanics that might vote Republican. But no, I don't think he lost anything on account of it with the people here in Florida. I don't know what to think. I mean, I have it shoved in my face, and of course I'm of a mind these days that the gloves are off. You don't want to start that stuff with me. I can no longer gulp and walk away. I just can't do it. There's some people that have heard some pretty strong words from me this year so far, but yeah, they're just hammering away. Just hammering away. We don't even the morning shows around here in the radio with locals on them. You know that race baiting white nationalists. I mean that's just what they see. They make outrageous claims, and we all see the underlying racist tones that are going on. I mean it's. You know how many times do we all have to wonder? They call Obama, he's not really American. He really doesn't know the ways of America. How many times do we have to hear all that before somebody with a brain figures out that that's that Republican racist Southern strategy code?
Sure, it is. Sure it is. And I don't know if you've seen, this latest, but somewhere, and I can't remember where, but there are billboards up now with a picture of the President of the United States on it that says, somewhere a village in Kenya is missing its idiot. Now, of course, that's a takeoff on some of the stuff that we used to say about George Bush. You know, a village in Texas is missing its idiot. But this is the a double down guy because it also plays up plays into birtherism.
Oh yeah, that's alive and well in the inner workings of that party. Isn't any question about it? Did you see? I thought I saw Donald Trump get Trump in the audience last night.
Did you?
Yeah. He was in the audience. I think he was sitting like three, four rows back. I'm positive.
Well, he got to speak at some point, or did they, or did he get truncated when they cut out the first day?
I thought they weren't going to let him speak, but I didn't. I don't know. Somebody, maybe someone can give us a text or something here and let us know what the deal is. An email on that. I don't know, but that's all they would have needed. They had every other clown up there. Clint Eastwood's going to be there tonight, is what we hear. And, you know, I was hoping for Charlton Heston. I thought he could stand his moldy old ass up over in the corner of the stage with his cold, dead hands wrapped around his assault rifle just for a fact. And they didn't do it. I was really disappointed because nobody shoves that home better than Charlton Heston did. I mean, come on.
Oh, absolutely! You know, he brought that act to West Virginia here in 2000, down to Beckley, just a scant 35 miles from where I sit right now. And he said, "Al Gore's gonna get your guns. You better watch your ass, or some hotshot liberal will take your Bible." You know.
well, it worked for him. You remember the rush for ammo and guns the last election?
Oh, it's still going on.
Yeah.
The Barack Obama has been the best thing that ever happened to the National Rifle Association and their membership. You know, the ammunition and firearms industry, because they can't keep enough guns and ammo in stock. They fly off the shelves. I think there's probably a direct connection somewhere along the way between that and places like Aurora, Colorado, and the little community in where the Sikh temple got shot up in Wisconsin, and
yeah. You know, Bob,
and of course, yeah, you know, I mentioned that, and I will never be able to hear the word Sikh again without thinking of Willard Romney saying that he wanted to pass his condolences along to those sheiks.
Yeah.
He is a bubbling font of human kindness and sympathy, isn't he?
Oh, isn't he though? And who was it the other night that was selling him as a self-made man?
What's her name? One of the attack blondes on Fox.
Yeah, a self-made man. Really, seriously.
Megyn Kelly.
Yeah. You know, I'd say if he did everything he did on his own, he did so knowing there was a huge golden safety net underneath him the entire time, an advantage that most of us don't get when we're starting a business or working in our young married lives and all that. We don't have that. But, and so you can afford to take more chances. You can afford to, you know, be a vulture capitalist at that point if you lose a little money. And that's, let's face it, that's exactly what the man is. He has no conscience whatsoever when it comes to workers' rights.
Now wait a minute. You just said a key phrase there, Guy. You said no conscience whatsoever. Isn't there a formal diagnosis for someone like that who has no conscience whatsoever? Isn't there a specialized designation within the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition of the American Psychological Association?
Paragraph 2 there, the sociopath, pure and simple. If that man actually believes in his heart that he has done business a lot of good in this country, well, he's so full of crap that he's delusional.
And that goes along with the definition too, doesn't it? That whole delusion. original thing, elevated sense of self. Oh, I said elevator. Damn it. No, that's not for his sense of self. That's for his car. Maybe the horse. Who knows? I got to admit, Guy, I'm a little bit dismayed. I don't know what to expect out of the Democrats next week, but, you know, we are what we are, and as a consequence, is it going to be a big kumbaya fest? Will they dare to offer some sort of retort to all of this filth, or are they typically just going to ignore it?
I'd say probably basically ignore it. I don't know what I would do. I think I'd probably come out with guns a-blazing. You know me. I'm not the one for pussyfooting around.
Well, I hope, among other things, that Joe Biden just blisters the hide off of Paul Ryan piece by piece and point by point. I saw a beautiful post on my Facebook page today. Our chat room moderator, Sparky, had put it on my page from someone who said, somewhere, Joe Biden is giggling and saying, son, if that's what you got, you best bring it on, but don't forget your mama.
Yeah. Well said. Because, you know, people, please understand, people. I mean, please understand. Here is a man that openly and blatantly wants to gut public education. He wants to gut Medicaid and Medicare. And I heard him say in that pathetic lying speech of his that the true measure is, we've all heard this, the true measure of a nation's greatness is how they take care of the people who can't take care of themselves. And there isn't anybody that's forsaking that whole notion any more than that man. He wants to do away with all benefits to anybody who's...
Right. But, well, it's this. Now, this quote does not come from an American woman, but I can't wait to pick up the newspaper and find out that she has endorsed Ryan and Willard, Willard Eddie Munster 2012. There's this really nasty, hateful woman named Gina Reinhart down in Australia. Okay? She is the world's richest woman. She's worth some $30 billion.
Yeah, she's making like $2 million of every 5 minutes or something.
Yeah. Well, she's mad at poor people. And she has written a column in some industry magazine, and she has said the following, and this should probably be part of the Republican platform, Guy. If you're jealous of those with more money, I don't know. Do you mind if I do the Australian accent?
Go ahead. You're good at it.
If you're jealous of those with more money, don't just sit there and complain. Do something to make more money yourself. Spend less time drinking or smoking and socializing and more time working. Become one of those people who work hard, invest and build, and at the same time create employment and opportunities for others. Now, here's the fun part. She's never worked a day in her life.
No.
She inherited her $30 billion.
And she will be the richest person in the world in another 3 or 4 years. She will be. There's no doubt about it.
Really? I mean, she'll overtake the Waltons?
Yes. Yes, she's on par to take care of pass everybody, such as the business that she has there.
Well, God knows, she'll probably pull a Rupert and try to come over here or something. By the way,
I was ready to start singing Take Your Wallaby Back, Jack, when you were doing that. Yeah, that's a wonderful Aussie accent.
Well, thank you. We'll wait for the Australian contingent of the Horn audience to chime in on that. No offense to you, but we'll take the natives' judgment on it. I can't resist. I love doing it. I love the sound of it. A cop could look at me and say, "You're under arrest, mate." Coming. Yeah. And just love the way it sounds.
I always was fond of saying, a lot of people who don't keep up on accents and foreigners and all that, I couldn't tell whether that guy was from Australia. Or if he was from England, I couldn't tell. If you couldn't tell which he's from, then he was probably from South Africa. Halfway in the middle.
Yeah, South Africa, where they arrest miners who didn't shoot their own colleagues, but rather whose colleagues were shot down by the police, and they arrest the remaining surviving miners for murder.
Yeah, well, you know, right's right. You gotta keep them in their place.
It's stunning what's happening all around the world. There is, Guy, a full scale assault on working people all the way around the globe. And what we're getting out of Willard and Eddie is that they want to double down on it here. I mean, how are they gonna reopen that plant in Janesville?
I think I've got a long nasty forecast for this country. I don't think that we're going to ever regain the great industrial might that we had. Maybe we don't even need the industrial might that we had, but I don't think those jobs are ever coming back until such time as the Chinese and Mexico and the Philippines and all them look at us as the third world country where they can get cheap labor.
Right, and the employment will come back here after our wages sink to the point that they are beneath those of China, Bangladesh, and Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, they'll look at the American workforce and say, "Well, send it to those people. They'll do it for 12 cents an hour like we used to." I mean, that's
and they'll be happy to have it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. in the long run, just like happened in our great industrial revolution in this country, there will be a need because of the robber barons will take over and they will oppress everybody just like they were doing here, and there will be a need for a union. And they will start over again, and they will rise to power once again and create another middle class. But that's a long ways.
See, you're more of an optimist than I am, Guy, because I think part and parcel of all of this is that the right wing and the predatory capitalists have seen what our past was, and they have sworn to themselves, and they make their little baby progeny swear in the crib, never again.
It's possible. If you get Henry Ford, the new people at Ford, to hire a whole army of thugs to attack at the River Rouge plant and kill off the Union guys. I don't know. It could happen. They'll certainly have enough money to do it.
Oh, they'll more than enough. Well, let me take you to an entirely separate and perhaps happier topic, if I may, because something special starts tonight, and I'm not talking about Willard's little speech to the sheets and pillowcases crowd.
Something special.
Yeah, this is the tonight marks the beginning of college football season.
Oh yeah.
Those Gamecocks of South Carolina, headed up, of course, by the old ball coach, are headed over to Nash Vegas to take on Vandy to get the season started. There's a couple other games going on as well. I know your beloved Buckeyes get the season started on Saturday. I think they open up with Fighting Cream Puffs of Canton Community College?
Miami of Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Red Hawks.
Yeah, Miami of Ohio. Yeah, it's who knows?
Well, the reason I wanted to bring it up to you is I know for a fact, and it's going to come as a real strangeness for you, Guy, but I'm willing to engage a little prophesy in here.
Okay.
I'm willing to prophesy that on Saturday, the first day of September, no one will be yelling "Roll Tide, Roll" louder than Guy James, and maybe for the first time in your life.
Exactly right. That'd be the first time I do that.
Because you know what's going down, right?
Oh yeah.
your second favorite team is playing Alabama.
Yeah, I don't know where the game is. Is it in the big house?
I don't think so. I think it's down in T-Town.
Okay, well, they're dead meat.
You really think so?
Yeah.
I'm looking here. I think maybe it's at the Big House.
Oh, okay. Well, they'll get a good crowd, that's for sure. But you're right. I'll be rooting for those Red Elephants. That's fact. I will. The Alabama Red Elephants.
Well, it's gonna. You know, after you've if you go to a wine tasting or something like that, they'll bring you a in between courses. They'll bring you a palate cleanser, right? You know, a little cracker or something to chew on, and that's the way I'm looking at tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. It's all a palate cleanser after this effluent filth that we've had to deal with for 3 days out of Tampa. I'm almost going to feel like a human being again by simply being able to sit down and watch some ball.
Yeah. The best and most wonderful task that I've ever had in broadcast. 4 years ago, and we were doing it on the Horn, and I went and covered the Democratic convention in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I don't think can be repeated. It truly was magical. The whole thing leading up to the night that he was nominated, and then the scene in the stadium. There was electricity there like I've never experienced in my life. And then I know I've told you about this. I heard one of the Republicans talking about Mitch McConnell the very day that Obama was sworn in, talking about how they were going to get him not let him be a second term.
Yeah, we were there for that.
Yes, we certainly were. And the night before, the afternoon before that, I was walking down the street and I found this wonderful younger, maybe 30-year-old African American woman sitting on a curb, and she had a young child with her, a boy of maybe 7 years old, I'm guessing, and I had an extra ticket to the inauguration. And I said, are you going to know, mister? Yeah, I don't have a ticket. And I said, well, I can give you this one. And she said, no, I would need two. But she said, I'm good. I'm good just being here. They rode the bus all the way from South Carolina, rode all night to get to Washington. And she said she had to experience and have her young son experience the wonderment of having Barack Obama inaugurated as the President of the United States. And I often think of that woman. That was, to me, the most eloquent words anybody said during that whole time. It was just so wonderful to see that picture of that woman telling me that they came, they just had to be there. It was historic.
You know, that was the same evening, or the next evening, I'd flown into Dulles, and
yeah.
I came on a bus and into the Vienna Fairfax station, and from there I got on the metro,
mm-hmm.
and managed to get lost, of course, because it was my first time ever on the metro. And along the way, the metro was just packed, and of course the metro was free that day. And I had an experience similar to yours. A pair of parents riding home on the metro, an infant asleep in their arms as they stood there on that jostling train, and his little hand had clenched in it an American flag. And It was an emotion of such profound quality that I don't know if it almost compared with the sense that I got that profound emotion that attaches to the birth of one of your children.
Yeah.
Because there was a sense there that something had changed. that we were turning a corner, that this country was going to get better. And I guess my question for you, Guy, is, did it, or is the bloom off the rose? Will there be that, if there can be a re-election, will there be that same sense of excitement? Because I've gotten a sense in these last three and two-thirds years that there is a great deal of disenchantment on our side of the aisle. And I hate that. And I hate the disenchantment that I myself have felt. But I'm not just, you know, I don't think I'm nearly as disenchanted with the president as I am disenchanted with the Congress that he had for 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bob, I concur with your feelings. I'm disappointed, and to be fair, it's easier said than done, of course. And when Barack Obama said that he was going to reach his hand across the aisle, I knew, and most of us knew, that no politics knew there was going to be a bloody stump come back, that there would be no compromise whatsoever, that they were only interested in saying no. Well,
did he? I mean, was that a good? Was that simply a manifestation of his good faith, or was it naivete, Guy?
I think it was naivete. I really do believe the man thought he could do that. I really do. And you know, I had to. The last few weeks of his campaign, things were deteriorating so fast and so hard, so bad things were getting. The job losses and, oh my God, it was awful. I thought he's got a lot of guts. If it was me, I'd quit. I couldn't imagine taking over as president under those circumstances. I know the other side gets tired of us hearing that, but oh my God, how, and I would have the same message for the Democrats and liberals. Hey, stop and think. And I have to stop and think about myself once in a while when I'm feeling disappointed. Do you understand how bad it was? The stimulus didn't make everything better, but it stopped the bleeding. This country would have bled to death if the stimulus hadn't been in there. It did a lot of good, but did it right the ship? No.
Well, it didn't right the ship because the other side wouldn't let the ship be righted.
That's right.
You know, the nerve of that, and if no one else will say it, Guy, then let it be said here, and let it be written, and let it be noted. That liar last night, because that's what he is. He's a liar. People who lie are liars. And Paul Ryan is a liar. As we say down here behind the cornbread curtain, the truth ain't in him.
Yeah, you're right.
What he did, like, you know, to sit there and say, oh, you know, impoverished Medicare, when he was the one who went along with it.
Yeah.
Who at one point in time was claiming that as his idea.
Right.
And so I come back to what you said, and I'm in agreement, and I find myself despairing sometimes of the American people, asking myself, do they know they're being lied to?
Well,
if they know they're being lied to, how do they feel about it? Do we as a people object to that anymore?
Well, I don't think we look at it realistically. I have a guy that I know pretty well that's a staunch Republican, and I've gotten to the point where the subject cannot be raised between us. We cannot talk about it because no matter what kind of facts I put in front of him, audio, visual, whatever, no matter what I put in front of him, he said, well, you know, that's some liberal crap that you got somewhere. If you want to find the truth, you get it from Fox News. Well, what are you going to do? You can no longer talk to that person. There's nothing you can do, and that's that with them. I don't think we could ever get the Republican base to change their minds to get an all, you know, they want to live in their all-white world with all of them thinking they're going to be rich someday and not have to pay any taxes and all that. It's sobering. many questions.
It is, and I guess we'll wrap up this wonderful hour this way, Guy. I don't even like to contemplate this, but what happens if, I mean, just from your own perspective, what happens if we wake up on January the 20th to the inauguration of Willard Romney, who will then have a 60-vote filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and a majority in the House? What happens to America?
That's too awful to even contemplate. That's oh my God, you didn't have to bring that up. that's too awful. As apprehensive as I am about this election, I can't think that's going to happen. But,
it gives me the fan tods, the cold chills, the shivers, to even contemplate it, but.
You know,
What has America become in that hour?
Well, I don't know how many people have read Atlas Shrugged. But they have a lot in common with her. A whole lot in common. And if it's just going to be everybody out for himself in this country, it'll no longer be the United States of America as we know it, that's for sure. And
I think that is the it's the absolute truth, and it is a nightmare scenario. But from where I stand, you know, my eldest daughter is married, she's got three children, we've got three grandchildren. And you know, when you're young, you don't tend to think in terms of that kind of conceptuality.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
But I am now. I have no choice.
Right.
And I find it absolutely terrifying. Not for myself, Guy, but for those grandkids.
Absolutely.
And for my daughter who's got a medical condition. She's uninsured because, you know, her husband is working his butt off, and he's too rich for Medicaid.
Oh, yeah, that kind of rich. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, I mean, Walmart. That's where he works.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she can't get the medication that she needs. And when your thyroid's gone south, you know, that's not something that's easy to deal with. It's easy to deal with if you can get the medication.
And there will be millions of people in the same boat. There will be people who die in the streets because they don't have enough money to buy medication or see a physician or stave off some sort of a medical condition that could have been taken care of had they afforded to go to the doctor. It's criminal what they're doing. Oh, don't get me started on that. God, I'm terrified about it too, Bob. We've gotten to that point now. You and I both, I'm older than you, but we've gotten to that point now where we can see just not too far down the road what's happening, and it is absolutely frightening.
I mean, and you know, from a secondary standpoint, I mean, we talked just briefly a few minutes ago about what we've got, you know, what we deal with here in West Virginia and Central Appalachia, mountaintop removal. I'm not kidding when I say that scenario with President Romney, Republican Senate and Republican House and Republican-controlled Supreme Court, Central Appalachia will explode like a 4th of July fireworks show.
I believe it.
And you know, how do I pick up bag and baggage? I mean, this is like something out of an ancient saga. How do I pick up my family and my extended family and say, come and follow me, for yea, verily, we are bound for the land of milk and honey? Because there's no more land of milk and honey in this country, Guy James.
Nope, there's not.
It's a land, if we get President Romney on January the 20th, no, it won't be a land of milk and honey. It'll be a land of piss and vinegar.
Yep. Yes, I agree. Bob, it's been a great pleasure.
It has been a joy, Guy. And as this campaign season progresses, there's an open phone line for you anytime. And, there's never been a moment that you and I have shared on the air that I have not walked away from saying, damn, that's among the best I've ever spent.
I do as well, Bob. I enjoy your company very much, and we are very like-minded on a lot of things.
Indeed we are, and you're mighty good folks, and I hope we have a more inspired conversation perhaps after the Democrats have their thing next week.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Take care, Guy James.
Bye now.
Bye now. Among the best progressive broadcasters who have ever graced a microphone, my good friend, Horn colleague, Guy James. We'll take a break. It's about a minute before 7 p.m. here on the East Coast, Eastern time zone at least. You're listening to the home of conversation radio. You are listening to The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. And just because I know that the fans of Guy's program from back in the day will get a kick out of this. Yeah, this is what it sounded like when Guy came on the air every afternoon. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oddly enough, that's not what it sounded like. I hate it when I get all worked up for a... Dadgummit. Let's try it again.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, can you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox.
Yeah, that came on a little bit early. But that's okay. That's what you used to get every afternoon when Guy James would take to the microphone. And, What fun it was, and what fun it always is to share a little time with Guy. Because nobody's got a clearer vision of where this country is and what this country faces than does Guy James. So, yeah, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 30th, 2012.
I woke up, it was fine. Next minute, it was just like all over the place. Everything underwater, everything.
This wasn't supposed to be a Katrina. It's turning out for the East Bank
to be as bad, if not worse.
Flooding, evacuations, and levee breaching as Tropical Storm Isaac moves inland. But too little too late for Midwest farmers, and as House Republicans cut weather monitoring agencies. Hip deep in rhetoric at the Republican National Convention, plus...
Will this be a country that keeps moving away from foreign oil and towards renewable sources of energy like wind and solar and biofuels?
President Obama uses the C word.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oh, the speeches, the pageantry, the fun. It was like Christmas morning if Santa kept all the gifts for himself and filled stockings with clean coal.
Yeah, I've been watching that Republican National Convention, too. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Dez, some very exciting news as we go to air today. Of course, you know that BP has a great interest in the Gulf Coast.
Indeed.
And in Louisiana. And the good news is that after the oil company made $7.7 billion in profit in the fourth quarter of 2011 and $6 billion in profit in the first quarter of this year, it has decided to donate to relief costs from Hurricane Isaac. They will be donating $1 million.
Ooh, a whole $1 million.
That's right. Very, very thoughtful of them.
Indeed. Well, Hurricane Isaac has weakened into a tropical storm again as it moves inland, still packing relentless rain and flooding and spawning a few tornadoes. President Obama has declared federal emergencies for Louisiana and Mississippi, releasing federal funds. And Louisiana's Republican Governor Bobby Jindal warned the danger is not over yet.
We're going to continue to see the weather effects of the storm, especially as it moves to the northern part of our state. On the east bank in Plaquemines Parish, there was overtopping near Braithwaite at a non-federal levee. They are considering actually doing a breach intentionally. Water.
And as we go to airtime, it appears that they will be breaching that levee to release some of that pressure. So far, it appears that the $14 billion in post-Katrina infrastructure repairs and upgrades to that federal levee system have held up to this first major test. In 2005, 1,800 people died in the flooding after the levees failed in Katrina. With Isaac, only two fatalities have been reported so far, but hundreds did have to be rescued from their rooftops and attics in flooded areas outside New Orleans.
Which is a point I should add that Breitbart.com's editor-in-chief, Mike Flynn, told me last night on Twitter he thought it was hysterical.
That's funny?
Well, he was watching Weather Channel and thought that they were making a lot out of nothing, despite the fact that hundreds and hundreds of homes were flooded out from this storm.
Unbelievable.
Breitbart.
In Mississippi on Thursday morning, officials ordered an immediate evacuation of residents near a dam on the Mississippi-Louisiana border as a precaution due to fears of a potential dam failure due to Isaac's relentless rainfall. Now, on the plus side, Tropical Storm Isaac is forecast to deliver much-needed rain to the parched Midwest, but that heavy rain may severely impact what's left of the U.S. corn and soy crops that are already decimated by this summer's record drought. While the Gulf Coast is getting hammered by Isaac, just want to point out that the Republican House majority partying in Tampa all week voted for severe cuts to our weather monitoring agencies, nearly $500 million from the National Weather Service and nearly $1 billion from FEMA. And House Republicans are proposing even deeper cuts in the lame duck session after the election.
Lame indeed.
Speaking of the Republican National Convention in Tampa, the rhetoric is flowing hip deep and keeping the fact checkers very busy. But unlike the 2008 convention, the party of climate science denial has been curiously low-key this time around on energy policy. So far, no chance of drill, baby, drill, perhaps because the majority of Americans support federal clean energy investment over oil, and the GOP does not.
Also, absolutely no talk of climate change and global warming after the hottest summer on record in the history of the U.S.
Yeah, they've only had a handful of pot shots at the Obama administration, like this jab from Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
And now the EPA is the Employment Prevention Agency.
Of course, McDonnell is lying. The actual data shows that new pollution controls at power plants, for example, create tens of thousands more domestic jobs than are lost by federal regulations. Finally, one politician this week did mention the C word, climate change. Out of nowhere, President Obama, at a campaign speech at Iowa State University this week, said the forbidden words.
The decisions we make as a country on big issues like the economy and jobs and taxes and education and energy and war and climate change, all these decisions will directly affect your life.
Wow, climate change. Haven't heard the president mention that word either for a very long time.
Yep.
For much more on the stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report so we can keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. Follow us on Twitter at Green News Report and find us and like us on the Facebook. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed, you are nine and a half minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. On the horn, I'm Bob Kincaid. If you're new to the program via any of the many ways to listen to the program, welcome, unless you're a right-winger, and in that case, piss off. You're not welcome here. No, really, really, go away. Go find Sean Hannity's podcast or Mike Huckabee's or something. Screw you. You're part of the problem. You're not invited to the conversation. Goodbye. Email coming in. We're going straight to the phones, by the way. Got a couple of lines open, but we got some stacked up. I hope you're all still there. I wanted to throw this out your way. Mike just wrote in. He said, I saw this on Raw Story and thought it needs the whole world to know. Former Republican presidential candidate 1L Michelle Bachmann is encouraging voters to support Mitt Romney, Willard, because, no really, sit down, you're not going to be okay, because, glad I'm already sitting down, Barack Obama is extremely wealthy and can't relate to the common man. See, I had to say that all at one time, or else it just would have fallen. I couldn't have finished. Mike notes, you know that by and large, Republicans seem to take pride in being ignorant and do not want to learn what is true. To quote John Stuart Mill, says Mike, although it is not true that all conservatives are stupid people, it is true that most stupid people are conservative. Yeah, I like that, Marty. Marty says, oh, just say to the right-wingers, we don't serve your kind here. Yeah, that's it. Precisely. Because we don't have time for the stupid on this program. Plain and simple. So that having been said, wow, thanks to Guy James for that magnificent hour. Ray wrote in and said, that was a powwow of words of steel. I'll send that along to Guy. He'll be happy to hear that. I think that'll prove inspiring. So away we go to the telephone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
That was wonderful hearing Guy.
Wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I miss him something fierce.
Yes, I do too. You know, he was my first radio guy. My guy was my first radio guy.
Exactly. I know what you mean. Yeah.
He was
your entree into the world of progressive radio.
Right. Even hearing the progressive radio, that was a whole lot on it. Even the progressives weren't really progressives, you know, that I had heard before. They were, we had to look at all sides now.
Right.
First of all, I just wanted to tell you about my eye surgery. Everything is, seems to be set. They gave me some eye drops. I have to have two different kind of eye drops, and they were like going to be like over $200 and something or more. But anyway, they gave me samples of the one, and then the other one, they gave me a different, you know, company, which my insurance coverage paid for that, all the, you know, the deductible. And then they're getting me a ride, taxi ride, which is great. My son's truck has been up on a pedestal for about a month and a half, so I don't have to worry about that. Just the whole thing seems to be working out okay.
Well, hallelujah for small favors.
I said, these are great. And, you know, the guy that I was supposed to be operating on, met his father years ago. So it kind of gives me some confidence there.
Good.
But anyway, good. You said you wanted to know about it. I'm ready to say a little something about the speech last night. I wanted to hear how he went across, got across, you know, because I've never heard him really do well before, but he did really well with Tongue Lies. I mean, L-I-E-S Lies. Big letter I, lies. Lies, 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 lies.
And more lies.
And more lies. The whole thing was lies. So it lets you know what the guy is like up front. And what was Walker doing crying?
Well, I mean, he wasn't necessarily crying.
His tears was rolling down his cheek.
Were they really? I thought maybe he was just sweating.
I
thought he was just sweating under the under the withering question of the MSNBC crew.
It's hard to tell with the expression on his face. You talk about a.
Well, there's been a couple of speeches he gave Juanita where I'm pretty sure he'd had a couple of margaritas or maybe a little bit of the straight stuff before, just to starch him up real good before he went on stage.
Okay, well, maybe that was after, that was post-liquor tears. You know, those happen sometimes.
There's nothing quite as pathetic as a crying jag.
You know, he's such a hero now.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sorry, you were talking about Scott Walker. I was talking about Rince Priebus. You know, the chairman of the RNC, Rince Peter.
Oh, he's so disgusting.
He's disgusting indeed, but that's who I meant. I think he was just flat out liquored up.
I haven't watched the whole, all of them, and I don't know whether I can handle Jeb.
Well, you know what? This is Jeb's convention.
Yeah.
Everybody may think it's Willard's.
Right.
But this is Jeb's convention. I loved the graphic that I saw on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
It said RNC 2012, Jeb Bush 2016.
Yeah, they're trying to get their toehold in there some way, somehow.
Well, Jeb, you know, if you remember the Bush family.
I do recall them somewhat.
Yeah, they're like buzzards. You know, a buzzard never takes on anything it actually has to fight. It prefers to prey on the flesh of things that are already dead and rotting.
What comes naturally, not...
Right, Jeb would never want, and I admit my error in this, Jeb would never want to actually face an incumbent Barack Obama. He's hoping he can get somebody in 2016 that he can do the slimy Bush business on.
Yeah.
Without having to deal with someone who is his better.
Well, you know, it kind of makes you wonder if we did get what you and Guy were talking about, you know, get these people in office, kind of makes you wonder how long somebody be long for this world. I ain't saying who.
I understand.
So, you know, somebody else can come in and take over. You get my drift?
Yeah, I do. I do.
And I think they're trying. They don't care if they get rid of us. They don't care what happens to us because they know they've got the whole world to come and do their bidding.
Well, we're just in the way.
That's right.
We are useless eaters. Let's see. What's the phrase they use for us in that nasty old woman's book, Atlas Shrugged? Moochers. We're moochers.
I tried to read it. I couldn't read it.
I've gotten through it twice, and I kind of hate myself for it. But, no, we are moochers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like that woman, that Australian.
Yeah. We're laying up drunk and smoking cigarettes. That's why we're not rich.
Yeah, right.
Juanita, I wish you'd quit laying up drunk and smoking cigarettes so much.
You caught me in that.
Daggum it.
By the way, I would tell you, my son was walking by, and he said, well, who took over Bob's show? Somebody from Australia. He knew it was you, but
yeah.
Being funny.
Well, sooner or later, the critiques will start coming in from Australia, and it'll be things like, Bob, don't quit your day job. Bob, that's not a real Aussie accent. Bob, you need to spend some time down here before you do it again, to which I will say, absolutely I do. You know, I don't know. I'm willing to be an illegal immigrant to, you know, just hide out somewhere in Brisbane.
I'm thinking about, jumping back to the lovely candidates or whatever. I'm thinking about, you know, they got to take away anything that we've got, like Obamacare, and because, you know, that's of the devil. And anyway, I'm thinking about all the Medicare people that have the donut hole. Now, I'm fortunate I haven't had to face that because my medication is pretty limited. But, you know, they've been closing it partially, and it'll soon be totally closed. You know what I'm talking about, the donut hole.
Yes.
And if that comes loose, somebody's going to get mad. There's going to be more of that boom, boom stuff going on.
I fear you're right. But I don't, you know, it's not our side that's going to be doing that. But the other side.
No. Well, you know, our side can be pushed so far, too. But it'll be the ones that are.
But if our side gets pushed too far, you know what we do? We have a committee meeting. And at the committee meeting, we decide if we need to have a we've been pushed too far summit, at which we will pass around styrofoam cups of Kool-Aid on a shoestring budget and see if we can't rustle up some borrowed tambourines and go to Washington, D.C. for 4 hours on a Saturday and then just disappear like morning fog by Sunday.
Be sure all those people that wrote their poems get to say them, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bob, I'm going to let you go. And we had the edge of the hurricane. You know what I mean? We had a lot of rain. Not too much wind. And
kind of the outer bands.
Yeah. And, of course, the outer band is still extended down to Orlando. The last time I saw, I mean, it's amazing. But anyway, the, you know, working on the roof, and we put tarp up there and everything, and it held up pretty good. It had a few leaks, but it held up pretty good.
Well, I'm glad for that. I am truly glad for that.
Yeah.
And I know you are, too, because when there's a tarp up there, you never know when it's going to turn into a sail.
Yeah, because we've got about a third way done, you know, and the rest of it's just no roof at all. So it takes money, it takes time, it takes good weather, and we've been having rainy weather. Anyway, God willing, we'll get it done.
Indeed. Well, Juanita, take care of yourself and make sure you keep us posted on how everything comes out. And
okay.
We'll be talking to you in the coming week, I hope.
I would like for somebody maybe could look up on Guy James or see if he's got, so you could hear some of his Republican love things when he, from actual letters he got from Republicans. It was horrible. But he would make a joke out of it. And he had like this music playing and everything. It is amazing.
I'd ask Guy for some of that straight up.
Okay.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
Well, good night.
Good night now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. From Central Florida, that's our dear buddy, Juanita. And we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, this is Edward in Dallas.
Well, hey, Edward, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just had a couple of things to tell you. D Magazine, on the front cover, it says, Dallas women are locked and loaded. In other words...
Oh, dear.
When Kmart or Walmart has a half-price sale, don't go there. You'll get shot.
Because they'll kill.
Absolutely.
For a 50% discount.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm getting afraid anymore even to go to the grocery store.
Oh, like I've said before, it's a dicey proposition here, Edward. I mean, when you're standing in line behind somebody with a 44 Magnum and a jar of peanut butter and a loaf of bread. You don't, you know, you kind of look down. You don't look anybody in the eye.
Oh, no eye contact whatsoever. Oh, brother. Anyway, also, I was listening to some of this convention today. Anyway, you know, Clint Eastwood's going to speak tonight.
Yeah.
It just happens that his new movie comes out in 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ain't that a coincidence?
I wonder what it's about.
Well,
I say that, Edward, because I saw a story earlier today on the New York Times about the fact that Penguin Publishing is rushing up by 1 week the release of a book by allegedly one of the members of the SEAL team that took out Bin Laden.
Yeah.
And, of course, naturally, it is saying that the Obama administration didn't give the straight skinny on how Bin Laden was killed.
Yeah.
And there's a quote in it from one of the other SEAL team members saying, after they'd shot him, well, we just reelected Obama.
Uh-huh. Oh, well. Yeah, I've been hearing little snippets of that. Of course, I don't pay any attention to those. Oh, something else, too. Please tell Guy James I really enjoyed hearing him this evening.
I will. I absolutely will.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite like having a conversation with Guy.
True. I listened to him before I started listening to you.
Oh, I know. He had a very dedicated following, and for very, very good reason. He is a professional par excellence and bar none.
Yep. You got it right there. Well, you take care and have a good evening, and I just wanted to drop those two little tidbits, especially about the women in Dallas being locked and loaded. I can't believe that. And that's in a glossy magazine.
But just to be clear, they were serious. I mean,
they were serious. Absolutely.
See, my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers are traveling to Austin this fall to play football, and I've thought I'd love to come down there and see that game. You know, historic stadium, great town. Then again, I don't know that I want my hillbilly ass shot at, Edward.
Isn't that something? And I don't mean this to be derogatory, but what are you going to do if you run into some lady who has a severe PMS?
Oh, well, or you know, just a severe hatred for the Mountaineers joining the Big 12. That'd be enough.
Well, that too. Either one would work. Oh, well. You take care now.
All right. You too. You too, okay. Edward. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Edward, calling from Dallas. Lines opening up now, 877-443-2366. Thorn in the Side Thursday, the direct dial number, if you want to save us the toll-free freight, 304-658-3333, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Boris Johnson.
Boris.
Calling from London, Bob.
Oh, well, you sound like you're in the next room, or maybe even Northern California.
Bob, I had to call. I saw in the London Times that the face of Paul Ryan, Bob.
You saw his face?
Yes.
Well, you know what's interesting, Boris, is that when he looks in a mirror, he doesn't see his own.
Oh, this is the face of fascism, Bob. This is fascism.
You know, he does kind of have that pinched up, squirrely ass face, kind of like a Himmler, doesn't he?
He just needs a little mustache. Just a little one.
Or maybe the round glasses to, you know, look like, yeah.
Yeah, like Himmler. But he reminds me of that little man in Germany, in Dusseldorf, you know, around 1925. He took over Germany. That's what but dear Paul Ryan, he lies better. He's a good speech maker. He's a good liar. You know, he will destroy your whole New Deal. Everything Franklin Roosevelt did, Bob, will be gone. No safety net for anyone. Because, you know, the moochers, all those moochers, they're just parasites, Bob.
Moochers, exactly. Exactly.
Right. They're just there for the benefit of the Romneys, Mitt Romney.
And we're just laying around on the dole waiting for a check and smoking cigarettes and drinking screw top wine and that's us. That's us proles.
Right. You just don't work hard enough. You don't work hard enough. You're lazy, and you deserve what you get, and you get nothing.
Ain't it the truth? What's up, Andy?
Oh, not much. Hey, I don't know if you saw, but, you know, there was an article that came out about Thailand recently, their GDP number for the second quarter. Did you happen to catch that, any chance?
No.
It's an interesting piece because it came out, I saw it in the Financial Times on August 21st. Their GDP for the second quarter was 4.2%. Which is a great GDP number. I don't know if you just saw it. Our GDP number was 1.7% for the second quarter, and that was just revised upwards from 1.5. But their number was 4.2, and it was way bigger than what they thought. And you know, there's been a lot of unrest in Thailand over the political situation. There's also a lot of economic hardship there. So you know what the government did in April to try to calm down the working class?
Oh, no.
Well, they raised the minimum wage
in
April, which is a good thing, of course.
Yeah.
And they raised it 40%. So you can imagine the Chamber of Commerce in Thailand went effing ballistic. Crazy. You're going to destroy this economy.
Oh,
you're
it's all, yeah, it. Right, yeah.
Right, it'll never recover. You'll just put us, you know, in a recession. You'll just tear this economy apart. We'll be in a reset. We'll be in a depression. Well, they raised it. You know, ours is like, what, 725 nationally, 750 nationally? Theirs is now $9.52 in Thai baht, you know, if you do the translation.
Okay, so the equivalent would be 952 U.S.
In U.S. dollars, 952 nationwide in Thailand. That's the minimum wage. This is shameful to the United States. This is shameful. But, of course, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, the business people, they all went crazy. They're just going to destroy the economy. No, the economy friggin' took off. Now, granted, they had all the problems with the flooding and stuff, and you'd think there might be some kind of comeback or probably some stimulus, but still, it didn't. They thought it would, and it was way above expectations. 4.2% GDP for their second quarter, and they raised the minimum wage, showing again that any kind of Republican logic does not, austerity does not hold water. If you give people money who friggin' spend it, and GDP is mainly based, like 70% of the GDP is based on consumption of what you buy, you put it in the hands of people that are going to spend that money and consume it, you're going to bolster that economy.
Again, yeah, it's going to go somewhere.
Right. Austerity is not the ticket. You know, the ticket is put money in the hands of people that are going to spend it, just like Roosevelt did during the Depression. And that's what's going to get your economy fired up. You know, not this austerity baloney that Paul Ryan keeps pushing, you know, to just...
How do we manage to be a day late and a dollar short, philosophically, economically, theoretically, on all of this, Andy? Haven't we watched austerity put into work with brutal force all over Europe, and haven't we seen its outcome and its net effects? And yet the American people are what, still gullible enough to think, well, you know, that's just because that's them communist Europeans doing it. We're going to do it right.
And we don't have the advocates here. We don't have the Democrats going crazy pushing for it. You know, the only one that really you had pushing for it was Teddy Kennedy in Massachusetts. You know, he was big on trying to put forward the minimum wage. But who do you have? None of the Democrats really are on the side of the working people on labor. You know, Dennis Kucinich just got bounced out of there. Who else do you have that consistently is on message? Like a John Edwards was consistently on message to protest about the plight of the working man. There's nobody there. And Obama doesn't put on his walking shoes for nobody. You know, it's all lip service. And he doesn't even use his bully pulpit. You need somebody with a bully pulpit. We don't have it. Don't have it.
And, I mean, you know, you think about people like Bernie. There are some good progressives in the Congress, but... You're right. It's that absence of a bully pulpit.
Yeah, he's not even a Democrat. But you're right. He's right. The guy from Ohio, I hope he keeps his seat. Friggin' Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
He's another good one. He stands behind working men. The guy Merkel in Oregon seems to be good.
Yeah.
You know that you have, but...
But I still with all due respect, and I hate that phrase. Okay, no, with tremendous regard for what Benedict said in the chat room a little bit ago, that the sun will come up on January 21st, even if Romney has that's true. The sun will come up. The sun has come up on all sorts of things. The sun came up on Hiroshima and Nagasaki after atomic blasts. The sun came up on Auschwitz. The sun has come up on any number of days after manifest disasters. But it is what the sun shines on, I think, Andy, that is the question. And I can't answer that question.
Oh,
I don't.
I heard. Right. I heard your talk with Guy James, and I hate to even think about what it would be like under Romney and Ryan and all chambers of government in the hands of the Republicans.
I understand it's possible to say, well, look, George Bush had one of them too. And
he did. God.
But you know what? George Bush did not have the... He didn't have the... You know, what he had was Dick Cheney. Everything that happened with George Bush happened because of Dick Cheney. But in this case, you've got a ruthless capitalist predator in the Oval Office, or might, and he will engage a level of brutality that will make George W. Bush look like a hippie holding a violet.
Well, it's already on record time and time again by these companies that Bain Capital just took to the cleaners and ran into the ground. I mean, there's dozens of them out there. KB Toys, DDI Electronics, that Miami medical device company. You know, there's companies all over. GS Technic Grinding Steel in Kansas City. That you know, that Honeywell Alpha, ex-Honeywell Alpha we were talking about yesterday, Ensada. There's another one in Ohio I was just thinking of that used to be a typewriter company. They took tons of these companies that they just took the factories, you know, took out the pension funds of the people. It's all about me with him. He is a sociopath. He is a psychopath. He has no empathy for other people.
His and yet CNN is
everybody else's death sentence.
And yet CNN is reporting, Andy, that the speech tonight will contain the accusation that President Obama's, quote, promises gave way to disappointment and division, unquote. I'm not necessarily going to disagree with that, but who fostered the disappointment? Who created the division, Andy? You and I and others on this program have had plenty of issues with the Obama administration's policies, more than I would say many programs would dare give voice to. But the fact of the matter is, there was a, you know, as Guy noted, it came out of Mitch McConnell's mouth the day after the inauguration that his purpose in life was to make Barack Obama a one-term president and screw the rest of this country. Right. That he would burn, that the Republic, I mean, it was an outright statement. And that little cabal meeting that was had shortly after January 20th, 2009, where they all agreed that they would burn this country to cinders in order to get that black man out of our White House.
And for a lot of us, that's what they did, by keeping the economy so dismal and keeping unemployment so high. They did create a country of misery, and I will never forget this as long as I live.
Nor will I forgive it.
Me, right, I will not either. I do not have any friends that are Republicans. I cannot talk to a Republican. I do not wish to talk to Republicans because it gets me so upset, because I really believe they have torn this country, the social fabric of this country, apart. And it's all for people like the Romneys. The gains of the Romneys are the losses of the underclass. And like you said, man, paying for food for Ms. Romney, 0.00001% of her budget, is trivia compared to what it is to our budgets, for sure, when you have inflation and food prices and everything else and living expenses. God, I love that. Oh, we lived in a small apartment under you both silver spoon kids. Get out of here. Give that garbage to somebody else. Old man, friggin' a CEO running for president. You're living in a small apartment. Yeah. Him and his trust fund. Please.
Right. You got to wonder who wrote the rent checks.
Yeah. You know, something else I wanted to bring you. We were talking about the Olympics. Couple times ago when I was on the phone. Did you ever hear about this woman, Olympian Barbora Spatakova?
I don't think so.
She won the javelin. She got the gold. This is what I mean. I'd love to see things that happen in the field events with other athletes. You know, in the javelin, you had 12 qualifiers in the Olympics, and those 12 qualifiers get 4 throws. Each of the 12, right?
Right.
Her 4 throws, every one of her throws were better than the throws of all 4 throws of all 12 other competitors. That's how good she was. She was a Czech thrower. And she's only 6 foot, 175 pounds. They're not huge, certainly a big for a woman. But 6 foot, 175 pounds. And all 4 of her throws were farther than any other competitor. And those are the stories I'd like to hear about.
Sure.
How?
But, you know, NBC said America's not interested in that sort of thing.
Right. How dominant she is in her sport. And she's 31 years old, I believe. She might be back one more time. And the guy who trained her was a two-time gold medalist. She's from the Czech Republic. Matter of fact, interesting story is, I have a guy I work out with at a gym here that knows her and came from a town like 4 miles away
in the Czech Republic from where she's from, a place called Jablonec, near Liberec, if anybody knows of the Czech Republic. It's in the Sudetenland. Just an interesting story, though. But how dominant in her sport, and she has the world record, she had it prior to this, but so powerful and so far and away better than anybody else in that sport. I just think it's me. I'll bet you none of the horn listeners had even heard. You know, if you didn't look for it, you wouldn't hear about it in the U.S. media.
Oh,
that kind of dominance.
No way. No way.
Right.
Because if it's not something that an American TV audience can say, USA, 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 over, then NBC wasn't showing it.
Right.
You know, I think the coverage of, like, the men's volleyball final between, what was it, Germany and Brazil, or Russia and Brazil or something, that was grudging at best.
Right. Right. Yeah, you mentioned that before. You know, too, another thing that blows my mind is down at this convention, the Republican convention, how the fossil fuel companies are pulling out all the stops with their money down here. Chesapeake, the gas company, has bought all the, has provided all the automobiles, natural gas. Powered SUVs for attendees down there. So they've, you know, volunteered that. I think it's Chesapeake Industries or whatever it is. They're in trouble now, that big hydraulic fracking company. And,
yeah, that's the fracking company that gave, what, how many millions of dollars to the Sierra Club?
Yeah, I believe they're the ones. They're in financial trouble, though, now because of the drop in price. And the guy who was...
Because the market got glutted. They got bitten in the ass by their own market dynamics, didn't they?
Yeah. The market is glutted and prices are at like a 10-year, 15-year low, something like that now. But they're in financial trouble, too, because the owner of that company, too, was the owner of that Oklahoma basketball team.
Oh, yeah.
The same guy.
I'll be darned. Yeah, that's the guy who fed cooked testicles to the Seattle Supersonics management staff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, nice guy.
And the American Petroleum Institute is big down there at the convention, too.
Well, has the coal industry been huge? Because
I hadn't heard, but you know they have to be represented down there.
They were big at the Denver convention for the Democrats, and they had a big presence in Minneapolis 4 years ago as well. And I just wonder, since they've fostered this war on coal horseshit, and there's nothing else you can really call it, Andy, and in light of the fact that my junior senator, my member of Congress, and my governor all refused to attend the Democratic National Convention, I wonder if there's going to be any big-time coal money in Charlotte. I don't know. That's not a rhetorical question. I simply don't know the answer.
Right. Well, my bet would be, yeah. I mean, if they're going to lobby and it's legal to do, they're probably going to do it. But
because remember, everything they spend, they get to write off on the taxes they don't pay in the first place.
How strange of Manchin to not go. You know, the DLC, and the third way Democrat, Bill Clinton's going to be the keynote guy. Matter of fact, next week I'm supposed to go to my DFA meeting, and we're supposed to have it at a big headquarters of the Democrat. And quite frankly, most of the Democrats make me want to vomit. You know, just the rank and file, because I'm not a rank and file Democrat. I'm more of a progressive. I'm waiting for a split off of some party that we can do a thing like they do in, Vermont, where you do actually have a progressive party.
Well, or the structure that they've got in the state of New York, where third parties can nominate another party's nominee as their nominee.
Right, the fusion.
What is it, the Working Families Party in New York?
Right, right.
Where you can vote for a more progressive party, but at the same time cast your vote for, and that way third partyism doesn't necessarily weaken a ticket.
Right,
and I don't mean, I'm not trying to suggest that nobody should vote green or whatever, you know, whatever motivates them.
I'm simply saying that the winner, Andy, is going to be either Barack Obama or Willard Romney.
Right. Well, it just upsets me. We're supposed to have our DFA meeting, and we're supposed to watch the convention, and we're supposed to watch Bill Clinton's speech. And Bill Clinton, for what he's done to this country with the demolishment of Glass-Steagall during his time in office, the Telecommunications Act, you know, just completely opening up the whole media.
Yeah, there's a lot. There are plenty of bitter harvests right. to be reaped and are still being reaped out of it. The welfare
NAFTA,
reform.
GATT, right. NAFTA, GATT, the whole trade regime, WTO, the Commodity Futures Exchange Act of 2000, just energy regulation run wild, the credit default swaps run wild, all under Clinton. You know, just the guy totally turns my stomach. I mean, he has much to do with the demise of the middle class and the problems we're in right now as just about any Republican, quite frankly. You know, he is bad. Bill Clinton is bad news.
And he had a god awful rotten Congress to deal with. That's not in the way of excuses, but it is more in the way of acknowledging realities.
So you know what you do when you have a rotten Congress and things aren't working out with you politically? You take a page out of the Ronald Reagan playbook. And you know what you do, Bob? You go to the people. You go to the people. You just keep on going, making speeches, going to where the people are, and telling the people how bad Congress is and how Congress is thwarting your efforts to do what you want to do. That's what you got to do. You don't just give in and do whatever the
fact. No, you don't. But some of the
go to the people.
I didn't do that. I agree with you in large part, Andy. But there are dynamics to take into account here
right.
that Ronald
this
Reagan
guy in the White House
that Ronald Reagan never had to deal with. That LBJ never had to deal with. That Nixon and Carter never had to deal with. Because it was during and precisely because of the presidency of Bill Clinton that Fox News came into being. It was precisely because of the demolition of the Fairness Doctrine that Rush Limbaugh was on the air and at the absolute apex of his influence, going at Bill Clinton hammer and tongs every day of his miserable, drug-addled life. And frankly, no president before Bill Clinton had to deal with that. So it's the watering down of the bully pulpit. And they knew what they were doing.
Right.
They meant to take that away from the president. Because as we saw during the 8 miserable, tormented, hellish years of George W. Bush, when they wanted to put a megaphone on anything George Bush said, there was Fox to do it.
Right.
Conversely, whenever they wanted to diminish the ability of, say, a President Clinton to get a message out, they were there too. And that contributed. I will believe this until I am proven absolutely wrong. And you know how I feel about the word believe. That dynamic changed his ability to bust ass on a recalcitrant Congress. You know, what was it? What did Harry Truman call it? The do-nothing, whatever number it was, Congress. And
right.
that appellation has stuck from that day to this. It would not have stuck, in my opinion, had there been a Fox News at that time. But, you know, that
yeah,
question...
Well, Clinton didn't help himself at all either. You know, it wasn't me that stuck that big cigar between that woman's legs, Monica's legs.
Well, hear, hear.
That was him, stupid.
Yeah, and that is stupid. And it was stupid. Just like what John, just like you know, you mentioned John Edwards. You know, damn. You know, I could if I was sitting in a bar, I'd be hey John, come over here. Yeah, smack. What were you thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
Or what were you not? What were you thinking with or not thinking with?
What happened? These guys, their heads get so big, and they think they're totally impenetrable. You know, nothing can penetrate their ego. You know,
well, there's a comparison.
Teflon, man.
Andy, there's a comparison to be made. Consider for a minute, and I know it's going to be ugly, but consider for a minute that you're Rush Limbaugh. Now, you're pulling down in excess of $50 million a year. There is nothing on this planet you can't buy. There's nothing on this planet that you can't have. You need merely snap your fingers, and it's there for you. That's the kind of power that that kind of wealth brings. So, yeah, okay, you go out and you buy your Gulfstream jet. Or maybe you buy yourself a 127-foot motor sailor yacht. Or whatever, you go down to the, but what you wind up doing is chewing up OxyContins to get the refreshing burst of flavor, because your life itself has been rendered meaningless by your own power and money.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in Limbaugh's case, it was OxyContin. And, you know, trips to the Dominican Republic to have little boys up to your room. In the case of a man of power, like, say, an Edwards or a Clinton, man, it is sex. Because nobody will ever accuse, except for the Dominican boy part, nobody's ever going to accuse Limbaugh of chasing tail. But if you're, and it seems to be, well, I won't say exclusively, because we've got Anthony Weiner the other guy that was governor of New York to consider.
Elliot Spitzer.
But I tend to think into, you know, redneck good old boys who were never able to date the head cheerleader in high school, and all of a sudden they got them some power, and the head cheerleader's knocking on their door.
Right.
Yeah, well, come on in, honey. Oh, you're looking mighty fine tonight. And you know, that's that contribution. It's why you can spread this across the board. It's why Michael Jordan wound up in a gambling scandal, because his life had become so damned empty and meaningless that he was betting $1 million on a 10-foot putt on a golf course.
Right.
When you get to that point, the search for existential meaning within one's life becomes more difficult. And that's why with somebody like Willard Romney, the focus is always on acquisition. You know, I've only got $350 million. I haven't made my billion yet. And, you know, here's this the nasty, nasty woman in Australia, and she's only got $30 billion. You know, she probably wakes up in the morning wondering, you know, God, I want $1 trillion. You see what I'm saying? Collecting art, there are people who know how to handle wealth, and there are people who do not. And for the most part,
Hendrix woman from Wisconsin.
Yeah, Willard Romney doesn't know how to handle wealth, because he's looking for the next thing to buy, the next thing to build, and it's all just a game. It's all just a trip around the Monopoly board for him. You know, ha-ha, proles, you've landed on my boardwalk with a hotel on it. Everybody out of the game, and then you realize, wait a minute, the game's no fun if there's nobody to beat on.
Right.
And this is, you know, this is a failing of the spirit. This is a failing of, dare I say it, the soul. Because if there is nothing there to ground you, then you're gonna wind up in trouble. And I think you can say that about Clinton. You can certainly say that about Limbaugh. You can say that about Edwards. You can say that about Larry Craig tapping his toes in the men's room restroom of the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. Every time one of these things happens among the wealthy and the powerful, it is, I submit, a function of the hollowness of their lives. So,
I can't argue with you. It just the insatiable need to get more power too just blows my mind. Now they're always in search. You know, the one thing Willard Romney driving him, he wants that power of the presidency. He wants that ability to just shove, you know, this neoliberal legislation down our throats. I think he's just salivating.
Well, he reminds me of that old joke about two lawyers, and this is not meant offered. There's no gender involved. Two lawyers are walking down a street, Andy, and they espy a beautiful blonde. We won't say whether he's a he or she's a she. We can do this gender neutral. And one lawyer looks at the other and says, "Man, I'd like to F that blonde." And the other lawyer looks at him and says, "Yeah? Out of what?"
A lawyer joke.
And that, but it's also a Romney joke.
Right.
Man, look at the great work they're doing at fill in the name of any company. Yeah, we could grind that thing into dust and take all the money. God, that would be sexy. I think I just a little bit.
Right. Yeah, they just get orgasms thinking how they could rip off the treasuries of these companies if they're sitting on a lot of cash and they have a cash cow.
Yeah,
they said it was enormously profitable. Said profits were up something like 3 or 4 fold over the previous year. Is it amazingly? And still, that wasn't enough. They had to do it in and ship it to China.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Once upon a time, I had a psychological expert explain to me something about the character of a serial killer. And, you know, the serial killer would literally, in the midst of the homicide, achieve an orgasm. Not from sexual contact, but from having, you know, his hands around the victim's throat. And I think that's where we are with Willard Romney. If you dosed him up real good with sodium pentothal, Andy, and said, "Come on, you like it when they suffer, don't you, Bishop Romney?" That sodium pentothal would loosen up. You're goddamn right, I do.
Well, you like firing people.
He says so.
He said,
yeah,
that.
Sure.
You like firing people. That was Freudian slip. Yeah.
I don't even think it was a Freudian slip. I just think it's a straight-up admission of the nature of his character.
He enjoys seeing people struggle and in pain, just reeling on the ground, sick with pain of what he's done to them. He regals in that. Like I said, this Diane Hendricks is another one, a billionaire, one of the Koch brothers' funders. And aficionado, a billionaire, and she's a big funder of Scotty Walker, the governor in Wisconsin. And they caught her on tape, very similar to Romney, just getting off on making Wisconsin a right-to-work state. You know, taking away the rights. When are we going to be a right-to-work
state? Oh, listen,
state?
When...
Can we do that? When can we get that done? You owe me, Scott. I can't wait till I have that power over my workers.
When Nimrata, the high point of Nimrata Haley's address a couple of nights ago was when she took to think talking about how they had non-union workers building Boeing jets and then they'd really put the wood to those union thug bosses. I mean, you could see her, the little beads of sweat coming out along her hairline. She was getting off.
And when has South Carolina ever had unions? South Carolina has always been the last stop until your product, like textiles, goes off to China. And it's always been the place to drag down industry in the Northeast, you know, like the textile industry, because it was never been a union place.
Ever.
Did they ever have unions in South Carolina anyway? Yeah, they just get off in that. They literally get off on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. This is not hyperbole. This is not analogy. This is not simile. This is not metaphor. They orgasm from hurting people.
Right.
They make the Marquis de Sade look like.
And I really get the impression from what I'm seeing. You know, I'm just take NPR recently. I heard a guy named Russell Roberts from the Hoover Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And he also represents George Mason University, which is another Koch brothers-funded economics school. And I think it's what's it, Greg Mankiw, who used to be the Bush head of economic committee for Bush on NPR, and how they're going into, you know, how Social Security, you know, the entitled, I hate that word, the programs that we have like Medicare and Social Security have got to go. We just can't afford it, can't do, you know, it's like they're really softening us up for that blow when they privatize those programs. And either we go to a voucher or Wall Street, you know, just gets our money and it gets out of the government. I just, it looks like they're softening, because even NPR is pushing it with these right-wingers big time, just softening us up for that blow when the New Deal is really just an afterthought. You know, just the past.
Yeah, it's just something that had to be killed in order to save it.
Man, I love how they say that. And that's exactly what they say, Bob. That's exactly what that fool Ryan says. We're going to save it. We're going to... It won't work.
Well, it's medieval. We're going to give it a... We're going to get the leeches out and give it a good bloodletting, and once it's all pale and drained out, we'll... Oh, look, it's dead. We saved it.
No private insurance company is going to sell an 80-year-old with cancer insurance or any other precondition. What are you guys smoking, man?
Well, the only way they would is if they remain compelled to do so under the Affordable Care Act. So they're in a bit of a conundrum now, aren't they?
Well, you know, if those two fools got into office, you know, the Affordable Care Act would be a thing of the past.
Oh, hell yes.
That would be the first thing they do if they have the Senate and the House. Bang, bang. They'll do that in.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You know, and that's with all, you know, again, with all regard for the sun coming up on January 21st, they have made campaign promises that repealing the little bit of relief that struggling, suffering America might get from the Affordable Care Act goes away job one, Andy.
Right.
You know, that little ditty I played, the Swiss Miss singing, "Hello, Come On Romney, Let's Go Party." You know, where they sang, "If he wins, you're uninsured." That's not a joke. That's real. Because you know, there's a broad philosophical gulf that exists in this country today between one side that thinks getting sick should not cost your entire family its very existence, and another side that thinks it's fun when people suffer. That we suffer because of some character flaw. Oh, Jesus, Jeb Bush has just taken the stage.
Hideous. Completely hideous. Another guy that, you know, puts on the big act, like he tries to be a centrist or a moderate, and man, he is as Nazi as his old man and his brother is. He is just as bad. It's that family, like Malloy says, is just a crime family. Period.
They're a syndicate.
They're ruthless.
They make the Corleones look like paragons of civic virtue.
Right, I'm still waiting for Pappy to come clean where he was when JFK was shot in Dallas.
Well, there's no come clean about it. We know where he was. He was in Dallas.
And he was in Dallas, right in front of the book center there, where he was shot.
I mean, isn't there a photograph out there?
Yeah, there is. There is. Matter of fact, I have it. I have a copy of it. Amazing. Pappy was in Dallas. What was he doing there? Gee whiz. And some of his other CIA guys, like E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, just happened to be there on the same day, too.
You know, we had a cop killing here in West Virginia a couple of nights ago. A kid from this county boosted a car and went hauling ass off down the highway, got himself reported for reckless driving, got pulled over about 80 miles from here, and somehow or another managed to shoot both state troopers after he was already in the back of the cruiser.
Oh, my God.
And I was thinking...
You knew about that. I would think that'd make national news.
Well, what kind of blew me away, bad choice of words. I immediately thought about G. Gordon Liddy. Remember back in the 90s on his radio show when he advised people to aim for the heads of law enforcement because they wouldn't, the Kevlar vest couldn't cover their heads?
Yeah, those IRS revenuers. Got to shoot where they're not exposed, where they're not covered, where they're exposed. Yeah, he used to teach that on his show.
And this kid, and of course, 22 years old, the shooter, 22 years old, blown away. Apparently was trying to commit some sort of suicide by cop. Very little journalism about who the kid was or why he did what he did. And that's one of those failings. We've got this grief, and it's real grief. When you've got two troopers blown away on something that should be as ordinary as a traffic stop, because there are bad drivers out there, you're reminded that public service comes with personal sacrifice. But I think there's also value in knowing why a 22-year-old kid from Fayette County, West Virginia, 4 years out of high school, no prospects and no hope of any, no real hope of a career, why he does what he does. But there will be precious little in the way of analysis of that, Andy. But that is, that's America in 2012. That's not an isolated incident. That's just another day.
Right, there have been so many.
And it's frightening because, as Juanita said, I think there's going to be more of them.
Right, so many. People just going berserk. Like that case just at Empire State Building recently, the one in New York. I know you and Sandra have talked about the guy in
Chicago, the south side of Chicago, that's turned into a shooting gallery, the likes of which weren't even seen during Prohibition.
Like they're saying in Chicago on any week, there are more killings in a week than a whole year, in the country of England.
Yeah.
For instance, maybe even the whole EU, all the EU countries in just 1 week in Chicago, to show you how far the gun problem in this country is so out of control. It is just completely nuts. Completely nuts. And people here are treated, so especially in the work, and there's no question, there are so many people dying in the work environment because a worker without unions, man, you are treated like a dog.
No, you don't. Listen, you don't even get to go to the bathhouse. You have to show up filthy from the coal mine to stand behind Willard Romney as a damn set prop.
Right. And no pay. And mandatory that you go there to keep your job.
A bunch of those miners in Ohio said, listen, we showed up because we knew what would happen if we didn't.
That's right. You don't show up, you're out of a job. Where are you going to work in southwestern Ohio or whatever? Or southeastern Ohio. Where else are you going to work?
They're working for Bob Murray, and this guy's suing a journalist for simply reporting that his company entered a plea bargain and pled to two misdemeanors.
Right. We'll fix that journalist for opening up his trap. He can't do that to Bob Murray. Can't do that. We own that news. We'll buy that newspaper. God damn it. No more advertising with them. Can't tell the truth.
Right.
That's the way those one percenters are.
Yeah, we'll teach them to write about us.
Oligarchs, man. Yeah, he's going to teach them a lesson. And he'll try to, just wring out as much money.
Yeah, and don't think for a minute that Ken Ward wouldn't get the Pussy Riot treatment if Bob Murray had the power to impose that.
Right. And they do. They're by the judges, too. They've done that in West Virginia.
Well, sure. Well, interestingly, this is going to be tried in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Ohio, which is, of course, Bob Murray's stomping ground.
Right, Bob Murray country. This is Bob Murray country. I own these counties. We'll see what kind of justice we'll get here. Get Bob Murray justice. Oh, God. Yeah, it's oligarchy, man. We're in oligarchy.
And plutocracy, too. If there is anything, I don't know if you heard Sandra and me talking about that ludicrous TLC program, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Child.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, if there's any bright spot out of the existence of that program, Sandra just sent along a news story to me. It turns out Here Comes Honey Boo Boo beat the RNC in the ratings on every channel the convention was on.
In the
all important 18 to 49 demographic.
Unreal. Oh, the stupidity, the ignorance. I haven't had a TV in 20 years, though, man. You know, I can't handle it. I can't handle television at all anymore.
It's getting pretty difficult.
I'm not there. I'm not.
I mean, I've got it because I have to check in on some stuff for purposes of this program from time to time. And yes, I've got it because I like to watch I like to watch my beloved Mountaineers on Saturday. Although, like, I'll be watching them in with a sense of foreboding, dread, fear, horror all season long. But, you know, that's what happens when it's your alma mater.
You know, I'm like you, too. I used to have season tickets to go to see your ball games. I used to love to see I used to live in Colorado, so I used to go to the Buffs games, and I actually have a degree from the University of Colorado, too. And I used to love to go to the Buffs games, but the university environment has so been taken over, you know, by the Lewis Powell memo.
Yeah.
You can just see it. All the trustees are right-wingers. The university bent is against free speech. You know, and like Ward Churchill, you know, at Boulder, how he got blown away. You make any statements, you know, against the administration or war or something that the administration, they'll just clamp or do something with the Palestinians. Here at Berkeley, the new thing is that the Palestinians, you say anything, they're trying to make it into anti-Semitism. God, these, and the privatization going on. I'm getting so turned off with the whole university environment. Now, where do you see a trustee of a board being an environmentalist at all? You know, where does a liberal even get to be on the trustee of a board or a board?
Well, odds are, if you're a so-called liberal and you make it onto that board, Andy, it is because you are an extremely wealthy one, which means that you probably are as disconnected as any other member of the wealth class from the real aims and goals of progressive thought or progressive work.
Right. So even the university environment is turning me off completely.
I commiserate with that, Andy, in ways that you would understand. Well, I commiserate. I do,
right.
Indeed.
Universities are supposed to be a place of free thought. They're supposed to be a place where ideas are thrown out, devoid of you know, if you're going to have ideology, you have multiple competing ideologies. You don't just have one ideology, and the neoliberal baloney, the whole privatization scheme and the demise of working man and the total immersement in the gratification of the plutocracy and our unyielding loyalty to plutocrats and authority figures. No, you're supposed to have people that question authority. But, man, there's been a big crackdown on that in the university environment. And, again, that's another element that's not good for our society at all.
No, not in the least.
And this is Lewis Powell memo, 1971, put into effect. He has pages in that memo just on the university environment and how to turn that around. Get them liberals out of there.
Yep, and that's why these filthy corporations so joyously support the likes of a David Horowitz.
Absolutely, and same thing with that Richard Mueller guy. Fund them, or get BP to put in money. Get the Koch brothers.
And that's the thing. These right wingers have companies they can go to, and they can point directly to them and say, listen, you know, you don't have to turn a profit on this. All you have to know is that you're going to turn more profits down the road because of this. And we do not have anything on our side that even remotely resembles that structure, Andy.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. Right.
Well, it has been a wonderful conversation, and I really appreciate it. We will, I hope, talk again soon, Andy.
All right. Thanks.
Tell Boris I said goodnight.
Good night, Bob. Good night. And thanks for the time, Bob. Let me get some time on the phone. Keep up the great work, man.
It's always a joy, Andy. You take care.
Have a great Labor Day. I hope your Mountaineers kick some donkey out there.
It'd be nice.
All right.
See ya. Bye.
Later. Bye bye.
Yeah, it's not just a home opener for my beloved Mountaineers. It's that other alleged institution of higher learning in this state, Marshall, that's coming our way on Saturday. So there's an extra, yeah, right. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm well, Jim. How about you?
Just taking a look at the RNC address by Jeb Bush and looking at the audience.
He looks a little bit more like his mama every day, doesn't he?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I had an email from Ray a little bit ago saying, and I'm not sure exactly what he was addressing, but he said, that's why I quit buying Quaker oatmeal. And, well, I don't know about Ray, but I quit buying Quaker oatmeal a long time ago and started buying store brand, not just because it was cheaper, Jim, but because it meant that I didn't have to have Barbara Bush's picture sitting in my cabinet.
Well, I can understand that.
If only Jebby was wearing some pearls and could clutch at him a little bit, he'd be the spitting image of his mother.
Oh, I understand. On 2 August 1990, I was in a receiving line at the White House to meet her and did so.
Dear God.
She was perfectly charming.
Oh, I'm sure.
She was. Absolutely. I won't go into all that, but judging from the conversations that you've had tonight, how many conversations have you and I had very similar to this over the years?
No small amount, Jim. No small amount.
Mm-mm-mm. Absolutely. And they are now at the apotheosis of their political orgasms, as I said, like postulates awaiting the host. And I can only imagine what Romney's going to try to say to make himself palatable.
I don't know. I don't know if he can, but for the for the fawning postulates there. If he came out and recited Jabberwocky, they'd cheer USA, USA, right?
I guess they probably would. I mean, they're having their golden moment, as it were. And from what I heard last night from Ryan, I thought to myself, where in the world is this coming from?
The Heritage Foundation.
And what are you basing all these things on? I mean, it was just one prevarication containing just a kernel of truth. Just a kernel of truth to make it acceptable. Yeah, that's the secret of totalitarianism. And what they do is to take just a little bit of truth or half truth, and by some means of chemistry, make it into what they consider to be the whole truth. In other words, they put enough sugar on it, or enough whatever, to make it acceptable to people who are so gullible. It is incredible. I would dare say if I were to go to the half those people or most of those people at the convention and tell them that the word gullible is not in the dictionary, half of them would be scrambling for a book.
I dare say you're right.
But, there's more than just being gullible here. I mean, these are extremely mean-spirited people.
Yes, they are. I mean, they don't, you know, they don't just want to kill Social Security for the fun of it. That's what I'm getting at. They like to watch people suffer because it makes them feel, Jim, like they have been elevated among the elect. Because it is a sort of neo-Calvinism, whereby wealth is the manifestation of God's love. Or God's approval, at the very least.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know, I thought of you, I have to tell you this, I thought of you when Ann Romney was giving the hagiography of her, of the origins of her relationship with Willard.
And she said, marriage.
And, yep. And she said, I was an Episcopalian and he was a Mormon. And I'm thinking, dear Jesus, she must have looked at that money and said, I will be a Satanist if that's what it takes to marry that wealth.
Well, she couldn't have been a very good Episcopalian to have done that, that's for sure. That shows you where her spiritual roots are.
Well, and if maybe I'm wrong, and I stand to be I'm more than willing to be corrected if I am, but I think it was her daddy who was, you know, just a straight-up atheist, agnostic, freethinker, whatever, you know, whatever word we care to attach to being non-theist. And as an act of manifest spite, it was either her father or her grandfather, as an act of manifest spite, upon his death, they baptized him into the Mormon Church. I mean, there's just something really, really hateful about that, Jim.
Well, I certainly don't understand that death, the confession, or whatever.
No, they wait till you're dead, and then they dunk somebody in the pool in Salt Lake City, and it is called proxy baptism.
Well, I know about that, but I mean, you know, excuse me, I'm at a loss for words, and normally I have been as of late, having listened to some of your podcasts and some of my broadcasts in which I say you see or I mean, and I hate to do that, and I didn't used to do that. I guess that's the encroachment of age and the loss or the attenuation of my faculties. But, you know, it's just incredible to see how anybody could believe in some of the stuff the Mormons preach and Joseph Smith and all this other stuff, and how intolerant these people are.
And how just plain rude.
Well, and yeah,
I mean, we've had our discussions and disagreements over the years, Jim, over, for instance, the afterlife or the presence of some people in certain places in the afterlife. But it's no joke that the Mormon Church baptized Adolf Hitler into Mormonism in death. A human being stood in a pool of water somewhere in Salt Lake City or God knows where and was baptized into the Mormon Church in the name of Adolf Hitler. It's real, Jim.
Bob, you're kidding. They actually took, they were able to, was this like someone being baptized in his name, or?
It's called proxy baptism. In fact, I remember a time a long time ago when our news ninja, Gene, who was raised Mormon, told us all about the process. I think he said they were visiting Salt Lake City, and it was a great honor to be one. And so, you know, Gene Gene has CP, okay? So they literally dunked him in the name of some dead person so that dead person could participate in the ordinances of Mormonism in the afterlife. And yes, they did that with Adolf Hitler.
And what is CP? I'm sorry.
Cerebral palsy.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just didn't understand that particular acronym.
Gene has experienced. Gene had been the proxy for some non-Mormon being baptized into the Mormon afterlife. Now, I guess this makes me small and petty on the one hand, because I don't believe in the whole streets of gold thing. I don't know what happens after death. I am not so presumptuous to suggest that I do. It could be anything from Bertrand Russell's I'll Rot to Choirs of Angels and anything in between. I find it incredibly offensive, Jim, that a person could spend their life dedicated to a creed or a faith or none whatsoever, and then find themselves by virtue of some sort of ignorantly well-meaning Mormon baptized into their church, and the next thing you know, some higher level church functionary is claiming that they're Mormon now, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it, because by the time we're done, we will have the whole planet Mormon.
So we're basically talking about the cult of death, right?
Sure it is.
Well, you know, Bob, that goes with us a long way back. I mean, look at the ancient Egyptians, who spent a majority of their lives preparing for a trip into the Elysian Fields.
Well, and you can say the same thing for the Mayans, who were told by virtue of the Popol Vuh that they had a trip coming up that they were going to have to make. Mexica kings were buried with a little dog that would lead them through the underworld. Pennies on the eyes of the ancient Greek dead to pay the ferryman's toll into the underworld. You're absolutely right. It goes way, way back in our psyche and in our history. But the thing is, I guess I'm just making this personal. I think about what a woman of faith my grandmother was and my mother was. And I'll just say this plainly. If I ever found out that some godforsaken Mormon had baptized either one of those women into their crazy little religion, I would not be responsible for my actions.
Well, proxy
because there is an absolutely necrophilic element to it. It has that feel, because when you do to the dead cannot defend themselves, and when you do things to the dead, there's just something extra gross about it.
Well, I agree with you there, absolutely. And as far as proxy baptism is concerned, I think that kind of violates the whole principle of what baptism was supposed to mean, you know, as far as cleansing and remission of sins and things of that nature. And, you know, in order for that to really take effect, the person has to be alive and in realization of what he's doing. That's, that's my opinion on it. I mean, we differ on a lot of things, and we have over the years, but nonetheless, this is one brand of religion that I have a very difficult time in understanding, and I'm pretty tolerant. As a matter of fact, I'm very tolerant. You know, I've always believed in let 100 flowers bloom and allow 100 schools of thought contend.
Yeah, well, that's the whole marketplace of ideas, and I understand. I identify with it. I applaud it in many instances, and I am a staunch upholder of religious freedoms. You know, if you want to be a Scientologist, goody, good for you. If you want to be a Mormon, good for you. You want to be a Southern Baptist? You want to handle snakes? You want to you want to be the Santeria, you want to be a Hindu, you want to be a Buddhist, you want to be Muslim or Jewish or Zoroastrian, good for you. Welcome to America. You can do that. But do not presume, and this is where we are failing in our current society, Jim, do not presume to think that because you are free to practice your religion, you are free to attempt to compel me or mine to in the process. And that is the entire sum and substance of the Republican platform, that they are going to compel us to be what they want us to be, whether we like it or not.
Well, that particular mode of thinking
absolutely undermines religious dogma and faith.
Which, mine or theirs?
Well, anybody's. I mean, you know, nobody has the right to, to enforce their beliefs upon another person.
And for all that they hate it, the Quran itself, the single most central tenet to the Quran is the statement early on, there is no compulsion in religion.
No, there isn't. It is a voluntary thing. It is something that a person accepts on his own, with his own beliefs, and or it's the way he's been taught, and I guess he will continue to go along that path. But if he should deviate from that path, I mean, that is between him and his maker, or him and his conscience, or him and whatever.
Right, but there's an understanding in that, I think, that any religion that is compelled ceases to have any legitimacy, because faith that is compulsory is false.
I mean, it has as much legitimacy as the people who were living in Russia under Stalin and his version of that religion, because it was religion with him. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And unless you accepted what the party line was saying, well,
there was a reason that Stalin commissioned Sergei Eisenstein to produce a trilogy of films about Ivan the so-called Terrible. And he got through the first one. Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com pointed this out in his Your RDA of Irony. Eisenstein got through the first one, and Stalin loved it. Then he got through the second one when we saw Ivan's excesses, and suddenly Stalin wasn't so in love anymore, and the second film was suppressed, the third film was not produced, and the next thing you know, Sergei Eisenstein got all dead.
Wonder how.
Yeah, indeed.
Well,
don't have to wonder long nor much.
No, I think he probably got a knock on the door at 4:30 in the morning from the, I think it was then under Stalin, the either OGPU or the NKVD, and you either went to the Lubyanka, the tallest building in Moscow, from where you could see either Siberia or eternity. You know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I think some of these people are trying to emulate, and it's very frightening to me. It really is.
And it'll, people will say, you're overstating it, you're being hysterical, because nobody's gone out and rounded up Rachel Maddow yet. Well, they won't take the top folks. They'll just make it clear that there are things you don't say. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, self-censorship is the most profound censorship. And this is not a critique of Rachel Maddow. I mentioned her because she was on my screen at the moment. It is a frightening time. Not because they are actively doing it yet, Jim, but because their words make it abundantly clear that they are trying to figure out a way to do it.
Well, they've been doing that for a long time, Bob, and you know it. I mean, this is not something that's just, excuse me, come into being. This has been in the works for a long, long time, and it has been well orchestrated and well planned. And they have been biding their time, marshaling their resources, and now they're coming out. And I would really hate to think that should I be alive next year to see Romney being sworn in, because God only knows what's going to happen after that. I mean, I enjoyed your conversation with Guy James, and excuse me.
And again, Guy was not engaging in hyperbole either.
No, he wasn't. I mean, Guy James is very down to earth. He's very specific, and
well, our buddy Mark,
he doesn't put up with any bullshit.
Our buddy Mark from Florida and or Georgia wrote in a little bit ago at the end of my conversation with Guy, and he said we're all scared, Bob, all ages. And it's true.
I have reason to be, and I don't know what the Democrats are going to be able to do next week to counteract some of this stuff, because if they don't come out fighting, if they don't come out, as Guy James said, you know, with, you know, both fists in the air, or if they indulge in platitudes and kumbaya.
Yeah, this ain't no time for rope-a-dope. I mean, this is a street brawl.
Exactly, and this is what I've been saying all these years. I mean, you know, when you deal with an enemy like these people and people who are of that mindset, you're going to have a very powerful weapon in your arsenal. And it's not going to be through peaceful means. It's not going to be through reaching across the aisle means. It's going to have to be with naked brute force. And I hate to say that. And I hope I don't get a knock on the door at 4:30 in the morning for having said it. But that's just my view of history.
You know, I'm gonna say something here, and I'll probably get letters saying, no, now you really have gone over the top, Bob. But we've had those little cyclists come out our road from time to time with their white shirts and their skinny ties and their black pants and their Book of Mormon. And, you know, can I tell you about another testament of Jesus Christ? And, you know, if I'm not doing anything, I'll stand there and talk to them a little bit and just be friendly, because I figure from what I know about the so-called Mormon mission, their lives are hell. I mean, really shit.
Yeah, you know.
So I'll be decent to them. But you know what? If we're dealing with, if we're having to say President Romney on January the 20th, 2013, here's my advice. Do not be rude to a Mormon missionary who comes to your door. Don't be cute. Don't slam the door in their faces. Listen to what they've got to say, because they, you know, there was a time, and you remember it far better than I, and it had a profound impact on you. There was a time when this country feared that John Kennedy would turn the government of the United States over to Rome.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I know.
Well, here's the difference. John Kennedy was not a bishop in the Roman Catholic Church. Willard Romney is a bishop in the Mormon Church.
Oh, how many times have I heard very devout Catholics denounce John Kennedy, saying that he was no real Catholic and all this kind of...
Oh, well, you know, the leader of that filth was Rick Santorum.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I tried to listen to what he had to say, but, you know, basically he was, there I go saying you know again, and I'm trying to get away from that, pardon me, but Santorum, up until the very last minute of his speech, wasn't supporting Romney, but himself. And that's what I've noticed in a lot of these speakers that have come to the forum in this convention, that rather than supporting Romney, they're still supporting their own beliefs and sort of giving some sort of half-assed consent to Romney. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
I mean, in spite of their projected image of cohesion, I mean, look what happened when they did the roll call and, you know, what they did to Ron Paul and people like that.
Yeah.
And they're not as united as they would like you to think they are.
Well, and that's why I said last night that I want every fetus, snowflake-loving, anti-abortion, save-the-unborn advocate in this country to be provided with a copy of Jane Romney's interview in which she said, Willard will not touch the rights of women to an abortion. Because I want those freaks to stay the hell home, Jim.
Yeah. You're right there. And the only other thing I can add to that is Romney did say that he enjoyed firing people.
He did.
Well, boy, there's a real example of humane treatment.
Yeah.
of your subordinates.
I mean, this whole thing, if there is a common theme or a thread that should run from now until the election in November, it is the old parable of the frog and the scorpion. You know, the scorpion and the frog are stuck on the banks of a river and they need to get across. And the scorpion says to the frog, well, let me get on your back and you swim across.
Oh, I understand.
And the frog says, you're a scorpion. He goes, no, I won't sting you. He says, well, you can't sting me because we're going to both die in midstream if you sting me. And so the frog gets in the water. The scorpion gets on his back. The frog starts swimming. And they get about halfway into the river, and the scorpion stings the frog. And the frog says to the scorpion, why'd you do that? Now we're both going to die. And the scorpion says, you knew I was a scorpion when you let me on your back.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is what America is faced with right now, Jim.
Well,
we know. We don't suspect. We are not uncertain of. We don't surmise. We know exactly who and what Willard Romney is. He is a predator.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, his whole history, if anyone wants to really look back into it and see what he did with Bain Capital and other things in his career, I mean, he's a very predatory individual. And does not believe in taking prisoners. Taking prisoners, hell. I mean, he doesn't believe, you know, I really don't know what that man believes except that he is.
Well, as far as his business dealings go, the sum and substance of his strategy and tactics is scorched earth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If he can't have it, nobody else needs it either.
Well,
and he will.
You know,
and
we had another person who tried that too back in Russia in 1941. You see where that got him?
What I'm afraid of, Jim, is that this is a historically different time, and by virtue of the difference in time, the outcomes will not be the same. There are a million reasons to tremble in abject terror at the idea of a Romney presidency.
Well, Bob, I hope you're wrong there, but you know, I've always believed that history is cyclical, not linear. But I mean, you've just got some very different forces that are at play here.
Well, I don't know. I like that other quote out there that says, "History does not repeat itself, but human beings do."
Mm.
Which I think is rather profound, but. I tend to agree that history is cyclical, but what happens is that was it William Butler Yeats who said, turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falconer cannot hear the falcon, or the falcon cannot hear the falconer, the center cannot hold?
Yeah.
And in a way, I think that's what we experience, because, you know, the speed increases, and there comes a point at which I think that things that were remedies in former ages no longer suffice because the thing is spinning so damn fast.
Well, Bob, it's like, you know, certain
feedback loops there. That's probably what I'm looking for, that it becomes a feedback loop. And you know, we talk about this in terms of, and you've mentioned it on the program from time to time, in terms of the decreasing salinity of the world's oceans and when that becomes a feedback loop. Because the reference to 350 parts per million, that is supposedly the tipping point at which this planet cannot get well.
Yeah, you can only go so far.
Well, I think that exists.
You get to the what I call the event horizon.
Yes, and you, in other words, you reach a point of no return. And, you know, I hope I'm not being politically naive. I hope I'm not overstating my case. But there is only so much that this government can stand before it has to be fundamentally transformed into something else. And the something else that that Willard Romney and Paul Ryan have planned to turn this country into is nothing that you or I or anyone within the reach of our voices right now wants to experience. because it will be a brutal place, and it will be, as I said earlier, it will not be a land of milk and honey. It will be a land of piss and vinegar.
Oh, yeah. Like I've said before on this program many times, I'm afraid there will be no passage into Jordan, and there will be no promised land, that's for sure. It will be a very desolate situation. Well, look, I, again, enjoyed your talk with Guy James, and again, my heart goes out to those people down in the Gulf, and I hope that their situation can be resolved as quickly as possible, because I think this is something they didn't count on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's happened yet, but they were actually talking about blowing one of the levees and said it would probably happen today.
Well, they're going to have to, because basically you've got a concentration of water just like a bathtub or a swimming pool, and they're going to have to blow one of the levees to release that water or allow it to just leave by evaporation, and that certainly is not going to work.
I mean, no, not with things like West Nile going wild not far away in Texas. No. You don't want a great big puddle of millions and millions of gallons of standing water.
Listen, let me tell you something. West Nile is here. I mean, there have been cases of it being reported here in this state.
And I got to thinking about that. I heard a report about it, Jim, saying that one of the reasons it was proliferating was the fact that governments can no longer afford spraying regimens. Now, you know how my mind works. I hear something like that, and I go, gee, can't afford to spray for mosquitoes anymore? Really? United States of America? And why would that be? You know, what a manifestation of the ultimate meaning of austerity, that we are so piss broke, Jim, that little communities can no longer afford literally a teaspoon of pyrethrin in hundreds of gallons of water to spray on mosquito breeding areas. A teaspoon.
Well, that's just sanitary neglect, and it's just absolute irresponsibility.
No, that is the thing. That is the sort of thing by which historians say, and then we knew that, and then one may see that the collapse is coming.
Yeah,
A teaspoon per acre, Jim.
I know. And, you know, to sum this up, you know, I can't help but thinking of what Louis XV said. The state may last by rain, but après moi le deluge.
After me, the flood.
Yeah, there it is. Well, listen, you take care, and all my best to you and your family and all the members of your Horn family. And
well, thank you ever so, Jim. I do appreciate it, and we will talk
deal.
Soon.
Listening to some of the people you have on there. I mean, I don't have a lot to say. I just repeat myself a lot of times. And you'll have to excuse the attenuations of being an elder individual. I never thought I'd get there. My God, it's just incredible. But nonetheless, I wish you well in your work, and I hope that we have better outcomes than we're talking about tonight. One can always hope. Until hope against hope becomes hope abandoned.
Indeed. But thank you, Jim, and have a good night.
And you too. Take care.
Bye now. Our good buddy Jim, with so much, offering so much for the conversation this evening. Ray noting that three people died of West Nile in Michigan this week. It's in South Dakota. It's in Texas. And don't think that it won't be in Louisiana now. And yeah, it's here in West Virginia. I mean, we've talked about these things from time to time. Grinding up roads that had previously been paved. Turning out the street lights. Turning out the traffic lights. Eliminating trash pickup. I heard a story earlier today in a phone call that I got from somebody who listens to the program, who has recently been to Michigan, and he said school kids there are being told to bring their own toilet paper with them to school, because austerity means not being able to give school children toilet paper. Toilet paper. And 1 teaspoon of pyrethrin, which ain't that expensive, to keep the mosquito population down. In evening spraying, when people aren't out but the mosquitoes are. I'm no fan of industrial poisons, but I'm less of a fan of West Nile, malaria, yellow fever, etc. A teaspoon. And communities in Texas, you know, where they value their individual liberty freedoms. Communities in Texas cannot afford a teaspoon of pyrethrin to mix into enough water to cover an acre of ground. Now, if you have any kind of long view perspective on what that means in a civilization, you know that that means that that civilization is teetering on the brink of disaster. Will there be a pyrethrin? Will there be a pyrethrin budget in a Paul Ryan drafted Romney budget? No, hell no, because the 1% will just go inside their homes and leave the rest of us to fend for ourselves. A teaspoon. I mean, this is the 21st century equivalent of for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. Teaspoon. How many teaspoons in a pint? 8 pints in a gallon. Sorry, I'm not metric. What, 55 gallons in a barrel? What a lunatic system of measurement. How much pyrethrin would it take for mosquito spray? Sure, we're probably talking about barrels upon barrels. But Jesus, when a culture reaches the point where it actively courts death and disease in the name of giving tax cuts to the wealthiest 1% in the country, what will be left for that 1%? Well, lots more than we got now, because you bastards will be dead. And yeah, some of us might like to say, well, you know, the 1% will get West Nile too. Not to the degree that those of us out here outside the bubble will get it. I was born in 1963. And at the time, they looked at me and said, you know what? You don't need the polio vaccine. They said that to my parents. You know, it's licked. So unlike so many of my generation, I don't have that scar. Or smallpox. I got polio. I didn't get smallpox. I don't have a smallpox scar.